జయం చెల్లెల భ్రష్ట విశుపాద పరమహంస పరిప్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభిచరణారవింద భక్తి వేదాంత గోస్వామి హరాశీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం నదీల ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిప్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహర్షిల ప్రభుపాదికి అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీహరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్ కి ప్రేమ సౌ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ గోపగోవినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధాకుండ గిరి గోవర్ధామికి బృందావన ధామికి మాయపూర్ ధామికి మధురపురి ధామికి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి ద్వారకాపురి ధామికి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌ ప్రేమానంది ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ టు ద సింబల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ టు ద సింబల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ టు ద సింబల్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరియస్ శ్రీ శ్రీ ప్రభుపాద నమామి శ్రీపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రసాయ భూదలే శివరి భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశ్లాఘయ చక్షుర్మిలితాం యేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టాం స్థాపితాం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపగదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంబికం వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురుం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహజనరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాన్ సహగణ లలితాం శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామిని నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి శ్రీమతి చరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః నమో విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమదే భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి నామినే శ్రీవర్షమానవి దేవి దైదాయ కృపాభయే కృష్ణ సంబంధ విజ్ఞానం దాయినే ప్రభవే నమః మాధుర్యోజ్జల ప్రేమాద్య శ్రీరూపానుగ భక్తిద శ్రీ గౌరకరుణ శక్తి విగ్రహాయ నమోస్తుతే నమస్తే గౌరవాణి శ్రీమూర్తయే దీనధారిణే రూపానుగ విరుద్ధాభ సిద్ధాంతద్వంద్వహారిణే నమో గౌరకిశోరాయ సాక్షాద్ వైరాగ్యమూర్తయే విప్రలంబర సాంబోధే పాదాంబుజాయ నమః నమో భక్తి వినోదాయ సచ్చిదానంద నామినే గౌరశక్తి స్వరూపాయ వానుగౌరాయ దే గౌరావిర్భవ భూమే స్వం నిర్దిష్టా సంచయ ప్రియా వైష్ణవ సార్వభౌమ శ్రీ జగన్నాథాయ దే నమః వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యాశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పదిదానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః భావధన్యాయ కృష్ణ ప్రేమ ప్రదాయ దే కృష్ణాయ కృష్ణ చైతన్య నామ్యే గౌరత్విషే నమః పంచతత్వాత్మకం కృష్ణం భక్తరూప స్వరూపకం భక్తావతారం భక్తాఖ్యం నమామి భక్త శాక్తియం హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగల్పదే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంత రాధా కాంత నమోస్తుతే సంస్కృతౌ పాంగో మమ మంద మదేర్గది మత్సర్వశ్రవదాం భోజో రాధా మదన మోహనౌ దివ్య ప్రజారణ్య కల్పత్రుమాద శ్రీమంద్రతాకర సింహాసనస్థౌ శ్రీమన్రాధాశీల గోవింద దేవో ప్రశాళి సేవ్యమానో స్మరామి శ్రీమన్రాసరసారంభి వంశీ వడతటస్థిత కర్షాన్వేణుస్వనే గోపేర్ గోపినాథ శ్రీయేస్తునా సప్తకాంజన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానస్సు దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే ఓం య ప్రతిపోదితం భగవదాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబత్వా మనుసందదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం నమోస్తు వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధి భుల్లారవిందాయ తవత్ర నేత్రం యేన త్వయా భారత తైలపూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలిలో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపం ప్రపన్న వారిజాలాయ తోత్రమేత్రైక బాణై జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ ప్రదదు హే నమః సర్వౌపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్స సుదీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహత్ వసుదేవ సుదం దేవం శూరమర్దనం దేవగీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం భీష్మద్రోణతటాజయద్రత జల గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహనీ కర్ణేన వేలాకుల అశ్వత్థామా వికర్ణ ఘోర మహరా దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సుతీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణ నదీ కైవర్తక కేశవ పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానకేసరం హరికథా సంబోధనాబోధితం లోకై సజ్జన షల్పదైరహర పేవీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్ భారత పంకజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే ముఖం కరోతి వాచాలం పద్మం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాకమహం వందే పరమానంద మాధవం యం బ్రహ్మావరుణేంద్ర రుద్రమరుదస్వన్వంది దివ్యైస్తవే వేదేర్ సాంగపదేర్క్రమోపనిషదేర్గాయందియం సమగాః ధ్యానావస్థితమద్గదేన మనసా పశ్యందియం యోగినో యస్యాం దమ్ విదుసురాసురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. Three modes of material nature which we have discussed now a couple of classes, isn't it? You have seen why this chapter is important. As I explained before, that due to our association with the modes, we are unable to stick to the truth. The modes of nature is causing the great grip on us. It has got a big grip on us, and that grip which we experience in our daily life in different ways, Krishna is saying here that these three modes of material nature alone, you will see when this chapter begins with that question from Arjuna. Parambhuya pravakshyami, he says to Arjuna, says to Krishna, that tell me that thing, what actually is holding me back here? Why am I able to not reach the truth easily? So Maya does this. This is Maya. Three modes of material nature means Maya. Basically, it is a discussion about Maya. Sattvam, Rajas, Tamas, goodness, passion and ignorance. The three modes. What are the three modes? Three modes is Maya, isn't it? Maya's grip on us, that's what Krishna is discussing here. And primarily, that grip is in the form of society, friendship, love and all other things associated with that. So, ragadvesham, kartrutva, voktrutvam, all this is a part of this Maya. So, that is why when we discuss this chapter, you have to look at it from the Vedanta point of view. Vedanta is telling us that this grip does not exist in the deep sleep state. It's not there, isn't it? That is only one state where Maya has no control over you. Directly has no control there, isn't it? Maya withdraws at that time, your false ego disappears, mind intelligence and the gross body goes away. Practically, it is only a coverage of the tamogunam that exists there, which does not allow you to be in the realized state. In the realized state. So that is why last Sunday when we talked about it, I mentioned this, that three major Upanishads, Chandokyam, Brihadaranyam and Mandukyam, is all discussion about this one state only. Which one? Deep sleep. Deep sleep. It is based on Sushupti or the deep sleep state, these three Upanishads have come into existence. Brihadaranyam, Chandokyam and Mandukyam. Chandokya Upanishad talks about Tattvamasi, Mahavakyam. Out of the four major statements in the Upanishads, Aham Brahmasmi, Prajnanam Brahmam, Ayamatmam Brahma, Tattvamasi. Out of this Tattvamasi Mahavakyam, which comes in Chandokyam, Chandokya Upanishad is all centered around this understanding of deep sleep state. How important that is, which we normally don't take very seriously, isn't it? We consider deep sleep means kind of a lazy sad who is sleeping all the time. But that person is experiencing a different world who is getting a deep sleep. He is in a much more ecstatic state than what we are with all our ragadvesham in the world. So you can see there from the absolute point of view, from spiritual point of view, that deep sleep state is a very important state in the sense that if you study that state very carefully, you can see the seed of liberation is planted in that. It's already there. So, in all those three things, deep sleep is important, all the three Upanishads. So, many Mahatmas, if you look, you will see in their jnanis particularly, in their discussions with the devotees, hundreds of times they're talking about deep sleep state. Hundreds of times they talk about deep sleep state. So, what happens there? We have kept the body away when we went there, isn't it? We kept the mind away. And one more thing we have kept it away, our personality. Vyaktitvam. Individuality in other words. We keep that away and then we go to deep sleep, isn't it? So, there, I don't have this lamentation or fear or death. None of them exist in the deep sleep state. My fear of death is only in the vacant state. Even though Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, you should take notice of birth, death, old age and disease. I can't even carry that to deep sleep. You see that? Krishna is saying to us, you take notice of these four things and you should be concerned about that. But Krishna himself has created this deep sleep in such a way that you can't even carry this fear of death or fear of birth, fear of old age, fear of disease, any of that thing into the deep sleep state. That's how beautiful that state is. So, and not only that, there is no separation between one individual to another. It's not that I exist, somebody else exists, or there is any possibility of any ragadvesham there. That is also not there. Isn't it? In addition to that, there is no separate God also exists there. Even if you want to take a God there, you say personal God, like which we fight in the vacant state about, even that vacant state, God also is missing there, in that deep sleep state. So, that is why, in the Chandokyam, it says like this, what exists in the deep sleep is Bhumava. Bhumava means Alpam and Bhumava. Alpam means limited. Bhumava means unlimited. Bhumava is unlimited. Bhumave sukham na alpe sukhamasti. This is in the Chandokya Upanishad. Bhumava is happiness. That means when we are with the unlimited one, you are in the happy state. When you are limited to yourself, you are in not a very happy state. Alpe sukhamasti. There is no sukhamasti. So, what happened is when you wake up in the morning, what has happened? Alpam has come. Alpam means, in the deep sleep state, you are with the unlimited, isn't it? You are not on your own. You are with the Supreme Consciousness. In merged with the Supreme Consciousness, you had happiness. But when you came out from that deep sleep state in the morning, immediately you became limited, came to your individual consciousness. So that is based on that Chandokyam is saying that Bhumave Sukham Na Alpe Sukham Asti. In Bhumava, Bhuma means the Supreme Consciousness, there is Sukham. Individual Consciousness, there is no Sukham. There is no Sukham. Because Alpa means what? Personality, isn't it? Personality. So, when we say that Bhagavad Gita is for personality development, so that is why they are particular about that, that the misunderstanding, how they have not seen the subtlety of the Bhagavad Gita. That's where it's coming from. They did not understand that Bhagavad Gita is talking about a state where you lose your personality or individuality. Instead, you studied Bhagavad Gita and you got some message from that, that you can develop yourself individually. That's a misunderstanding from there. So, because this personality itself is not a truth. Personality, our own individual personality itself is not a truth. Because in Supreme Consciousness, where is your personality or individuality? So, no matter how much you develop it, ultimately you are going to lose it. And it is constantly changing. It's also constantly changing. Because you can see here that you have a personality now. As soon as you go into deep sleep, where is the personality? It is gone, isn't it? Or it keeps changing. Your personality is also changing. Anything that is changing is not acceptable as a truth. That is why Krishna mentioned that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita itself. That Nasado Vidhade Bhav. So, Bhumavi Sukham Nalpe Sumati. So, Narada Maharshi went to this Chandokya Upanishad. It is like that. Narada Maharshi goes to the four Kumaras and they talk to Narada Maharshi about this truth. Narada Maharshi says so many things to Kumara at that time. Kumaras says to him that all the four Vedas I have studied. Who's saying this? Narada Maharshi says to Kumaras, all the four Vedas but all I have got is the sound vibration of the Veda. I haven't understood anything else from there. He said, all I have realized is a lot of name and a lot of sound. He says like that. And at that time, nothing has really benefited me, says Sri Narada Maharshi to the Kumaras. He says to him, at that time, Sri Sanat Kumara Maharshi mentions a lot of things to Sri Narada Maharshi. In this Chandokya Upanishad, there is one chapter, the sixth chapter, which is the most important chapter. And that's where this discussion comes. That he says to him that first thing Sri Narada, to Narada Maharshi says that if your food is very pure, food, what you take, the food what you eat, if that's pure, then your sattugunam will be pure. Again, modes of nature comes there. And if your sattugunam is very good, then the shraddha will be very good. Shraddha will become very good. You will see in the Bhagavad Gita, now from now on, this 14th chapter onwards, 15th and 16th chapter, Krishna talks about the three different kinds of faith, shraddha. And 16th chapter Krishna talks about the divine and the demonic nature. And the 17th chapter Krishna talks about the divisions of faith. Just like we have gunatrayam. Gunatrayam means the three modes of nature. Similarly, there is shraddhatrayam. Shraddhatrayam means three divisions of faith. Shraddha and gunam are closely connected. Depending on your shraddha, your gunam will be there. What gunam you will have. Sattugunam, depending on sattugunam, shraddha. If shraddha is in the sattugunam, or the gunam is in the sattugunam, shraddha will be in the sattugunam. Gunam is in rajogunam, shraddha will be in rajogunam. Equally tamogunam also. So, it is all connected to each other. They are not independent, each chapter. That is what you have to remember. All these Bhagavad Gita chapters are very closely connected to each other in its effect on us, as far as we are concerned. So, Gunatraya Vibhagam we are talking now. So, Gunatraya Vibhagam. And Shraddhatraya Vibhagam comes as the 17th chapter. proper given the translation as the divisions of faith. That's the title for that. Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yoga, that's what it's called. In between, there is two chapters, Yoga of the Supreme Person, and what is the other one? Other one is called Divine and the Demonic Nature. Yeah, Divine and the Demonic Nature. So those two chapters will open up the importance of this modes of nature a bit more in a detailed way. Divine and the Demonic Nature will tell us that. And Yoga of the Supreme Person, he talks about the state of that realization. Yoga state, in other words. That is the yoga state is what is discussed in that, the next chapter. So now we talk about the three modes of nature, material nature, and then the yoga state, and the divine and the demonic nature, then, and then again Krishna brings us back to Shraddhatrayam, the three divisions of faith. And you will notice this whole thing is connected altogether. So Narada Maharshi was told by Kumara that if you have the proper food, sattugunam, ahara shuddhi, sattva shuddhi, sattvam shuddham, and sattva shuddha means the shraddha will improve. What does shraddha improvement mean? Shraddha improvement of shraddha means the one consciousness that we cannot lose at any time, and that one truth what is inside all of us at all the time, that will become a reality to us. Because all of us, we know about this one thing, that Krishna's presence inside us is in the form of this spurti. Spurti means aham, aham asmi, I am, that awareness all the time inside. That's the only thing what we have got here, isn't it? To prove that Krishna is present inside, immediately Krishna goes away from the heart, this body is gone and there is no more activity inside. So tangible proof what we have now is this Krishna's presence inside is this heartbeat. We call it as heartbeat, but it is actually the presence of Krishna inside. So when when the Shraddha improves in us, what will happen is, this aham asmi, aham, 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 that we will start recognizing it more. In what sense? That ahangaram inside, what is our personality, we are not that. Rather, we are this awareness inside. This understanding will become stronger inside. This is what will happen. Today, we are operating all the time based on ahangaram, isn't it? Ahangaram is driving us. When you wake up in the morning, first thing is ahangaram wakes up. Then the rest of the activities happens. So when ahangaram, because our connection with ahangaram is so strong. Now, when consciousness is stuck with ahangaram, it is called jiva. Consciousness is stuck with aham bodham, it is atma. So we will move away from ahankaram to ahambodham, ahankaram to ahambodham. So at that time you will realize that this limited, selfish entity called ahankaram, or personality called ahankaram, is a bhramam or an illusion. It is then that you realize that when our attention, shraddha, falls on the ahambodham, awareness, and our attention goes away from ahankaram, the ahanda or the false ego, when that happens, what happens immediately is this, that my personality and vyaktitvam is a bhramam, is an illusion. Normally, we are very strong, and some people are very strong personality, we say, isn't it? Some people are very strong personality, we say. Why do we say that? In other words, we are saying that in a very polished way. Actually, what we are saying is, you've got a very strong false ego. But when we say that, we say to them that you've got a very strong personality in a very polished way. We put it to them. And there are some people like that, isn't it? It's true that very strong personalities, they are like that. So, when you know, come to know that it's nothing but an illusion, that personality, And when also realize that, when you come to this aham bodham, awareness comes, what happens is that giving up that personality is the right thing. Actually, it is very difficult to convince this through words. It has to be experienced and realized it. Only then you will leave that. Suppose you tell someone ahankaram is bad, you are not going to accept it so easily, isn't it? They will say, if I don't have the ahankaram, how will I continue in this world? It's only on the strength of ahankaram you are going on in this world, pushing your way through everything in this world and making yourself most prominent and making yourself more authoritative everywhere. You have to push this ego from inside, isn't it? So, when somebody tells you that ahankaram you give up, they'll say, then what's there in this world for me? But from Krishna consciousness point of view, that ahankaram moves away. This is self-realization. From move away from ahankaram and comes to ahambodham, the awareness that will be known to us. And only at that time, you will be willing to give up your personality and will be prepared to accept that ahambodham inside seriously. Only at that point. So, this is Chandokyam. Chandokyam Upanishad says like this. Srinarada Maharshi goes to this Kumaras and asks this question. No doubt, Narada Maharshi is an Acharya in the Bhakti tradition. That may be so. But still, Narada Maharshi also had to go to ask the Kumaras. Kumaras are highly jnanis, they are. Isn't it? They are called Jnananishta. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is saying, Jnana Yogena, Sankhya Yogena, Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. Krishna says there that Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam refers to Kumaras. Because if you look at the creation, from Brahma, they came first, the four Kumaras. They were Jnanis. Who? The four Kumaras were Jnanis. So Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam. In the Jnana Yogam, they are on a very higher platform. So here, you will see here, as soon as you accept that ahambodham, in many, many great personalities' life, if you look, you will see there that they have in their sanidhyam, what happens in the great personalities, your ahankaram goes away. That is what it does. When you are with a realized soul or with any great mahatmas like that, their surrender happens without your knowledge. Without your knowledge, surrender happens. This ahanda, jiva ahanda withdraws at that time. This is the beauty of that. Therefore, in many instances, many, many people who had contact with great souls like that, after they had a long association, when they have started experiencing this aham bodham inside, they withdraw from the world. Rest of their life, they spent very quietly in this world. And all of them left this world in a realized state. They didn't make any noise in this world. As soon as they got this, because once you are in the association of somebody, because generally you can see, if you are in the presence of a great personality, or like in Krishna's presence, what happens there? Unknowingly, your ego withdraws, isn't it? When you go in front of the deities, what's the mood? You don't go there challenging Krishna, what are you doing today? You don't go like that, do you? When you go there, naturally there is a reverential mood. What does the reverence mean? Reverence is this, that inside your ego, you keep it under check. You don't allow the ego to come out, act like a big man or act like an important person. You are not an important person anymore. Krishna is more important. It is the same effect in presence of great souls also. It's exactly the same thing. That in a natural way, you withdraw. Your ego goes away. It subdues there. It surrenders there. And it takes a position of a humility there. So that is what Krishna is saying here. That if that becomes a habit, like many, many personalities, this history is there in the case of Ramatirtha, Ramana Maharshi and many others, those who have associated with them very closely, after they left this world, we never heard about them. And then you get to know about them after many years, when they start searching about them, you come to know so-and-so lived here, he was with Ramana Maharshi or Ramatirtha or many people like that. And they when they were in their association, what they never asked any question, and they quietly in that association, they had their ego subdued. In other words, their ego has quietly withdrawn and they started experiencing the presence of Aham Bodham. Once they have got it, then they had no more interest in the personality and they were not interested in the world either, what happens in this world. So that is what it is Krishna is saying here, that accepting that Satta, what Devaki Devi calls it as Satta Matram Nirvishesham Niriham, that Satta inside. And if you accept that Satta, that is Aham Bodham, and give up that Vyakti Satta means this individuality or personality, not giving importance to it anymore, that means you became more conscious of the truth behind all these things. You become more aware or consciousness of the truth behind all these things, what is working in the subtle body and in the gross body. And once you start seeing that and experience that, then you are situated what Chandokyam says as Bhumava. That's what Bhumava means. That means you withdraw from the, when you are shifting your Shraddha from the Ahamkaram to Ahambodham. When that happens, after once it has happened, then Ahankaram cannot come back again. Then what will happen to anybody is, he will move away from Ahankaram as much as possible. In other words, whenever he senses that Ahankaram is coming, he will move away. He doesn't want it anymore. Because he has suffered due to Ahankaram whole life. That's what has happened. We are suffering because of that even today, isn't it? Because of this Ahankaram inside. So when you get released from the Ahankaram, and when it comes to Ahambodham, the consciousness, pure consciousness, what will happen is that no more you can't handle this Ahankaram. You don't want to be with it anymore. And naturally, personality, individuality, everything goes away. Then you want to have a very quiet life, and in that quietness, you want to experience that Ahambodham. This will come naturally. You can't do anything about it. That's the way it operates. So when that and Bhumava means that unlimited thing, when you are situated, you are no more situated in the Alpam. One is Alpam. Alpam is this limited. Ahankaram is Alpam. Bhumava or Ahambodham is Bhuma unlimited. Is unlimited. Right at this moment, our state is in the Alpam. Isn't it? So, this Alpam means limited. This Alpam, in this lifetime, and we have created one Alpam. In the last lifetime, we had another Alpam, whatever body we had in the previous life. And that Alpam lasted for some time. Then it changed and then it transformed into this new Alpam. This is the nature of Alpam. Alpam means that based on your vasanas inside, the subtle body operating from the mind, the gross body has come out. So that gross body we had in the previous life, based on that particular amount of prarabdha vasana. When that prarabdha vasana was over, that body finished. And new set of prarabdha vasana came, a new ahankaram and a new alpam generated from that. So, and this alpam is submitted to janma mrityu jara vyadhi. Birth, death, old age and disease is for the alpam, not for the bhumav. Bhumav is different. Bhumav is what? Bhumav is unlimited. That is why in the Bhagavatam you will see tat shuddham vimalam vishokam amrutam satyam param dhimahi. Remember in the Bhagavatam, in the very last chapter, Srimal Bhagavatam kasmayena vibhasutoyam atulo jnana pradipa pura tadrubena janaradaya muneye krishnaya tadrubina yogindraya tathatmanadat bhagavadradaya karunyatam. Afterwards, that verse finishes like this. Tat, that vastu, shuddham, vimalam, vishokam amrutam. It cannot, vishokam amrutam, it is nectar and distress cannot touch that. And that vishokam amrutam, satyam param dhimahi. That is the nature of the absolute truth. And that means this awareness, bodham inside, has become a part of that. It has become a part of that supreme consciousness, pure consciousness in other words. It's no more identifying with the ahankaram, false ego anymore. So, that tat shuddham vimalam vishokam amadam, tat shuddham, that sattvam, that is very pure. And there is no lamentation, there is no death. And the very nature of that consciousness is deathlessness. There is no death present there. And it is always there. It's always there in everybody. So, and that is why that Bhumava is a word in the Upanishad. Every night in Sushupti, we have that experience. Is it not? We have that experience in the Sushupti. Sometimes we get it in the day also, not only in the night. That depends on it. But it is worthwhile looking at it. Sushupti is not something you should write it off, thinking that it's a useless waste of time. No. Sushupti is something to learn from Sushupti. That is why Krishna is mentioning here that first step, that is why to talk about Sushupti. To talk about the Sushupti. After that, you go beyond than the Sushupti. Normally, we are in the grip of Jagrat and Swapnam. Is it not? Jagrat and Swapnam. Why am I bringing this as? This and the three modes are connected. You know that Sattvam, Rajasa, Tamasa. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. In these, this is how these three states have come from these three modes. You see? But neither the three states nor the three modes has anything to do with the soul. This is the beauty of that. Neither the three states nor the three modes has anything to do with the soul. Krishna has made it very clear in the Bhagavatam. Sattvam rajas tamam guna ide na buddhir na chalpana. Alma cannot be touched by any of these things. Whole problem is with this subtle body and these three modes. What is happening between them? This is what our life is now at the moment. So, normally because it is this strong grip of the Jagrat and Swapnam, that is both causing a lot of problem for us, isn't it? And so, Maharshi used to say it's a scorpionic grip of the waking state. That's how he puts it. Scorpionic grip. Scorpionic grip means, you know what it means. Scorpion's bite is very strong. Once the scorpion bites you, then unless you kill the scorpion, that grip won't go. It is so strong, it bites when it bites. Isn't it? So, we are in that grip. We are in that grip at the moment. So, the interesting thing is, when you want to come out of that, it is very, very difficult. What is important about that is, the waking state, the wife died or the husband died. And they were crying, oh, my husband died, wife is crying. Or the husband cries, wife died, whatever it is. And after a while, they got so tired that he went to deep sleep. Oh, husband or wife went to deep sleep. At that time, wife is sleeping with his head, with her head on the body of the husband and having a very good deep sleep. The very person who was crying in the vacant state, without any unlimitedly unable to control the grip of that vacant state of distress. So much distress in the vacant state. As soon as she or he moved into deep sleep state, that's gone. This is the reality of that, isn't it? So, and then he or she is sleeping. If you go and wake her up or wake him up, he'll say, why did you wake me up? I was getting some relief from all these things, isn't it? I had a little bit of peace of mind. Why did you disturb that? What has happened here? All what has happened is everything was forgotten in the deep sleep state, isn't it? She forgot about herself or he forgot about himself. There is no king, there is no minister. And there is no poor man, there is no rich man. And even other sinful activities, whoever has performed any kind of sinful activity, he doesn't exist there. There is no sinful activity there in that state. and there is no pious activity also there in that state. This sinful activity and pious activity and all what we say is all related to vacant state. It's nothing to do with the deep sleep state. So Shruti says, Satyakamaha Satya Sangalpaha. That means the Satyam that is experienced in that deep sleep state is Satya Sangalpaha Satyakamaha. In other words, it's there all the time and it's available, and that is why we say the nature of the pure consciousness is Nityam Shuddham Buddham Mukta Subhav. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Suryubam. It is eternal, it is pure, it is fully conscious, it's always liberated. These four things are related to that. Nityam Shuddham, and ever free, always free, Anandam it is. Suryubam, Anandam is its Suryubam, Shanti is its Suryubam, and you cannot bind that with anything. Like vacant state, you can bind you, isn't it? Vacant state can bind you through emotions, it can bind you. In the dream state, also emotions can bind you. Physically, you can be bound in the vacant state. Physically. In the dream state, mentally you can be bound. Is it not? When you get some strong dreams, you are completely in the grip of that dream. Isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, you will see one verse repeated 5-6 times in different places. Arteshu avidyamanebi samsardirna nivartade. That verse is referring to that. That avidya, till you wake up from that, you are under the grip of avidya. Avidya means is jnanam inside. Till you get released from that, you can't do anything about it. It's in the Bhagavatam, in the Paranjanobhakhyanam, in the Agadashaskandam, in the third canto, everywhere you will see this verse coming. So, here also, in the same way, that it is only in the deep sleep, nothing cannot bind you. You can't be bound in that deep sleep state, isn't it? Because, for example, in the vacant state, you are bound by the family members. You are bound, relations and society and all that. In the dream state, you are bound by your whatever dream experience you have, emotions or fear or happiness, or rarely you get any happiness, mostly it's fear. Some form of fear will come in different ways and give you trouble. But when you go to deep sleep, it cannot bind you with anything. So, what all we are doing is, in that Sushupti state, without anybody's knowledge, we go there. And we remove ourselves. We destroy ourselves. Destroy ourselves what? Destroy our own ego. There. That's what we are doing there, isn't it? And we are situated in the state of proper satugunam. Proper state, in the sense that we know our situation, what we are. That means no identification with the body. Body identification you lose. No identification with the mind either. Is it not? More than body and the mind, you lose your ahankaram, which is a big thing. How struggling we are to get rid of this thing called personality. And whenever we talk about this, we find that people frightened about losing personality. Is it not? They're very frightened about losing the personality. Losing my personality. I can't believe that. Somebody tells you like that, isn't it? But what you have noticed there is, when your personality has gone, all distress is gone with that. That is an indication that actually Atma is not experiencing any distress. It's your personality that is experiencing the distress. And all the problems are with the body and the mind. It's nothing to do with the soul. So, all you are doing is, this body and the mind which creating all kinds of problems in life, all you are doing in the deep sleep is, you are dismantling that and leaving it behind. That's all deep sleep means, isn't it? And it is not very problem at all at that time. Very sick people, for example, suppose you are very ill or you had a very serious accident, body is in severe pain or something, as soon as you go into deep sleep, that is the greatest relief. That's the greatest relief, is it not? Now, you can see that the big industry among the drug manufacturers is painkillers, is it not? What does it do? What does these painkillers do? You got a whole catalog of them available for all kinds of patients, isn't it? It's not a remedy. All it is helping you to go into deep sleep as quickly as possible, as long as possible, to get relief from the. It doesn't keep you in the waking state and to do things properly. All it is, because in a subtle way, the big drug manufacturers also and the medicine science also knows this. That deep sleep is the solution to the problem when you have a problem with the body. There's no other, when you have a really serious problem with the body, the solution is deep sleep. There's no other better solution than that. So the medical science knows that as much as the Upanishads talks about that. But Upanishads are little bit to go on further than that to explore what else can is the benefit of this deep sleep. And that's what they have found out. Whereas the medicine finished with that, because medicine is only concerned about the body. Nothing more than that. So, it is based on this deep sleep state that the rishis have found out that the body and the mind is not our permanent state. Body and the mind is not our permanent state. And that is why this review or this analysis is required about the deep sleep state. So, that is where Sushupti state came into benefited. That came into benefit for the rishis. They have said most distressed person or one who is suffering mostly, as soon as he goes into deep sleep state, all his distress is leaving him. And when does the distress leave him? The distress leaves him when the person who is experiencing the distress goes away. That's what happens with these painkillers also. What does it do? What it puts you is that your ego, who has been experiencing the pain all the time. Atma doesn't experience any pain. It's the ahankaram that is experiencing the pain. One who is very absorbed in the body, very much attached to the body, he will experience more pain in the body. That is the principle. If you are not too attached to the body, when you have bodily problems, it will not disturb you that much. It depends to the degree to which you are absorbed in the body. So what this has shown, the Sushupti has shown, is that as long as you go into the deep sleep state, that that pain has not gone. What has gone is the person who is experiencing the pain has gone. That's what you have given up at that time. That's the more interesting thing. Pain hasn't changed because we call it pain killer. But actually it doesn't kill, it kills the ahankara, not the pain. That's what it does. It doesn't kill the pain. Pain is still there because everything as far as material is concerned, it remains the same. Nothing has changed in the body. What it does kill is that the person who was experiencing the pain. So, and then when you come back to the vacant state, you feel again the same problem coming back. Is it not? Ahankaram comes back and the pain comes back along with that. So, it is from this experience that the rishis understood that this suffering of the world, what we all have, and all the problems of this world is only limited to vacant state. Only limited to vacant state. They have understood this. And it is not the truth. It is not the truth that they have found out. The rishis in the revelations, this is that Sushupti said, I am still there, but I don't have a distress. And I don't have death either. All I have a happiness state in that deep sleep state. Whereas when I come to vacant state, I have all the problems of life. All the problems of the body, problems of the mind, and this lesson, from this, they learned one lesson. What is that lesson? Lesson is this, that that without the body and the mind, and without this personality, I can stay. I can still exist without the personality. You don't need a personality to exist. This is a misunderstanding. The existence in personality is a deranged form of our existence. Deranged in the sense that all impurities have come in and we have identified with the body and the mind and we are existing in that way. So from there problems came. So rishis understood in a very subtle level, they have seen that our existence, because Krishna, that is why in the very beginning of Krishna says, of the Bhagavad Gita, that under no circumstances what exists cannot be destroyed. And we always exist. Under any circumstances we exist. Nasado vidyate bhavo. Isn't it? If it is like that, then that existence in the waking state and the dream state, you are experiencing it in distress. Whereas in the deep sleep when you go, you find that your existence is different and you don't have these distresses of the body and the mind. They found out from studying these three states in depth. How much rishis must have contributed to this. You can imagine how serious they were about self-realization. Finding out that in a very subtle level to think like this. First of all, to break it up into these three. Waking state, dream state and the deep sleep. And to analyze deep sleep in such depth that they have impartially, without looking at it where we look at it. Looking at each state what was happening. In the association of the three modes of material nature. And how it was affecting our existence. Throughout Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam Upanishads you will read, you will see this sthanatrayam. Sthanatrayam means this. Sthanatrayam. Sthanatrayam, this sthanam. These three sthanam. Which one? Jagra, Supnam, Sushupti. It is talked about that, who is that? In the Sringi's father, Shamigh Rishi. When Shamigh Rishi was in trance, we call it in English trance, isn't it? So this trance, what they call it in trance, means that sthanatrayam over that. Going beyond the three states. Going beyond the three states. So rishis knew and they studied this state so much in depth. They have analyzed it in such depth that throughout Upanishads it's coming all the time, discussion about this. So here, here they have found out that material nature is showing to us. Now you have to remember, even when we are in these three states, you are under the grip of material nature, isn't it? Only when you transcend the three states, you got released from the modes of nature. Slowly we are going into the chapter now. The three modes of material nature means you are in Jagrat, Supnam, Sushupti. When you free yourself from Jagrat, Supnam, Sushupti means you have also released from the three modes of material nature. Three modes of material nature. So material nature is showing to us that in the deep sleep state, it is possible not to experience any of the distress of this world. No distress can give you trouble in the deep sleep state. Even if you want to take it with you there, you can't take it. That is how properly sealed there, that no entry there to deep sleep. Even if you want to take, suppose you had all sorts of problems of life here, with your body, with your mind, with the family, with the society, with the children, with the relations, with this, with that, everything. As soon as you go to deep sleep, there put the shutter. Krishna puts the shutter there. You can't bring that with you here. You come to deep sleep and then you are free from all these problems. Above all, your own ahankaram, which has given you all this trouble in the waking state and the dream state, you can't take it there. You can't take it to deep sleep. Isn't it? There again, Krishna says, no entry here. So there is something about deep sleep important. You can see from that. In deep sleep, Krishna doesn't want you to bring all your problems there. Relax and then go back and suffer again later in the morning after you wake up. That's the message. And when you go to deep sleep state, Krishna's association, Krishna gives us. So from this experience, rishis found out one thing. If I can come to waking state and the dream state also, the same experience of the deep sleep, then it will solve the problem. That's how they found the solution to the problem.
they did not say that you sort the problem out in the world. World will go its own way. You can't solve, do anything in the world. Solve the problem inside yourself. How do you do that? You do it this way, that the very thing what you have experienced from the deep sleep state, that experience if you can bring into awakened state and the dream state, then you have solved the problem. Is it not? So, just like you have seen the water from a long distance in the desert, and when you were so thirsty and you ran all the way there to get the water there, but there was no water there. And when you came back again to the place where you started, you saw there water is still there. So, 3 or 4 times you have gone back and forth looking for the water. Then you realized that there is no water there where you are thinking there is water. So, therefore what happens? Even if you see water there, you won't run anymore. Because you realize there is no water there. Similarly, that every night you go into deep sleep state, and you've gone out of all the problems. And when you woke up in the morning, you started realizing that that state was good. And then you are again making the decision, I want to have it. I want to have it back. But I want it with full awareness, not like in the deep sleep state, with full awareness. So every night you are going there, and every night you are handing over your body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything. You remove that and you are in that state of happiness. And next day again, you are coming back to your personality state next day morning, isn't it? So many times, when you keep going and coming in this way, and what you didn't have in that deep sleep state, what was that? The body, the mind, personality, which all comes back in the vacant state, Can you not think at that time, just like when you experienced in the desert, when you kept running and looking at it and thinking that there was water, you ran back and you found there was no water. After many times, you realize that there is no really any water there. Krishna's point is that after going this every night after night after night to the deep sleep state and coming back to the vacant state, can you not think again that this vacant state and the dream state is not a real one? This is the question Rishis asked. They say you have to start like this because the grip of this vacant state is so strong. The vacant state is so strong. So, because one thing is, vacant state, you are continuously changing, isn't it? It's not same all the time. The vacant state you were when you were young is different when you get older. It's more like half dream, half vacant state. And so nothing is permanent like that, isn't it? And not only that, mind, intelligence, ego, all these things are continuously changing. This is the nature of this vacant state. Whereas in deep sleep state, there is nothing to change, is it not? In the dream vacant state, everything is changing. You don't know how to identify it. What is vacant state means? In the morning you feel something, in the midday you feel something else, in the evening you feel something different. In the summer you feel one way, in the winter you feel different. And every day it is different in this vacant state. Whereas in the deep sleep state, always it's the same. In the vacant state, when everything is same, you get bored. In the deep sleep state, when everything is same, you say it's good. Just see the contradictions between the vacant state and the deep sleep. So the rishis found out that changing is not the answer. Changing is not the answer to the problems. And not only that, continuously it is subject to change, this vacant state. So therefore, behind these changing states, there must be something which does not change. And in your experience, that is why in deep sleep state, what's happening is, that you are changing vacant state is gone. And you have gone to a state in deep sleep where there is nothing to change. You are in one state and in that state you are happy. You don't have any complaints. You don't have any problem of your ego. Ahankaram is not giving you any trouble. And you don't have any of the ragadvesham of this world. You don't have any kartrutva, bhoktrutva, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, any of these things. You have to understand the metaphysics of this properly, because jadam, the matter, the material body made of 5 material elements, is dead matter. There is nothing in that matters, in this dead material body. The soul, alma, is asangoyam. Asangoyam means it doesn't have any contact with the matter. Asangoyam, 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 puna puna, sachidananda rupoham. Its nature is satachita anandam, isn't it? Eternal bliss. It's not that some words we are saying, it's sachidanandam. What sachidananda means? Sachidananda means this, that it is satachita anandam, which means this satachita anandam is only possible if it does not have any contact with the matter, isn't it? And body is matter. That is the proof that soul has no contact with the matter. Soul has no contact with the matter. So soul, which is pure, which is unaffected by anything, cannot be touched by anything, and it is never in contact with the matter. Then, if it is like that, soul has no contact with the matter. Matter has no emotions, no thinking, feeling, willing, nothing like that. But when they come into contact together, two of this, Maya creates what we call, this is Ahankaram inside. This is Maya's mystery, so far not been solved. How Krishna does this through us? When did the problem start? Problem start when these two came together, which means Jiva's Ahankaram, and Ahankaram came in when the matter, for example, this mic. Mic doesn't complain about anything, isn't it? Happiness or distress, nothing for the mic. Our body is also like that. Body doesn't have anything, complained about anything. Soul has no complaint about anything. But when the soul and the body came together, there's a third one appearing in the middle of these two called the Ahankaram. That's the false ego, which is a product of Maya. Maya creates that Ahankaram inside. And that's where Ahankaram's birth happens. And when Ahankaram is born, we are experiencing the problems of the body, problems of the mind, and all other problems, ragam, dvesham, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam, and other difficulties as well in life. So, this is the invention of the rishis. Rishis found out this. And based on this principle only, they found out how to escape from this grip of the vacant state and the dream state. That they understood that vacant state, as far as they are concerned, vacant state is not real. Dream state is not real. No matter, you can argue whichever way you like it. They don't accept you because they know that you are talking out based on your modes of nature. You are talking about it. No matter who it is, any great intelligent person can talk about it. As far as the sages are concerned, vacant state is not real. They are saying that if it is real, then it should not change. This is the first principle. And vacant state does change. We all know that, is it not? So because vacant state is changing, dream state is changing, they say we cannot accept it as real, whereas deep sleep is real, where you are not changing. Therefore, that is first principle. Secondly, Krishna's point is that nasado vidyade bhavo nabhavo vidyade sadha. This Krishna is quoting this purely based on Tattva Darshi. Krishna uses this word Tattva Darshi often in the Bhagavad Gita. You know that. Tattva Darshi, isn't it? Krishna uses when he talks about the, which one? That word is about the Guru also. Jnanina Tattva Darshina, he says. You should be a Tattva Darshi. One who has seen the Tattvam, he will not accept no matter what you say about it. Because he has seen it, he doesn't need any more proof of that. So, Tattva Darshi will not accept any other statement except that deep sleep state, they have studied the deep sleep state, dream state and the vacant state, and they have understood that it is in the deep sleep state when you have got rid of your body, which is changing, when you got rid of your mind, which is changing, when you got rid of your personality, which is changing, that actual happiness existed. This is their invention. It is based on this. Ajahn Swamiji wrote a book called Proudha Anubhuti. It's a very famous book. Proudha Anubhuti means proudham. Proudham means highly, how do we call it in English? Anubhuti means realization. Realization of a very higher order. There is a book called Proudha. It's a small book, about 20 verses or something. And in there he mentions this about Proudha Anubhuti. He says, he mentions there that
Saptachit Sukharupam Asti Sadatam Naham Janatvam Musha Nedam Vabi Jagat Pradrishtam Akhilam Nastidi Janihi Bho Yel Proktam Karuna Karunashashatvayimaya Tat Satyamedas Pudham Shaddhastvanakha Shuddha Buddhi Rasi Chen Ma Che Mastas Matrastu De Samshaya.
There is a verse in that Proudhanubhuti. It's about 22 verses, I think, in that altogether. It's a small verses he wrote before he left this world. He says, Sattachit Sukhamasti. That Sukham is saying here, what is interesting about this verse is, a disciple goes to him and says to him, please instruct me on the truth. Instruct me on the truth. Acharya says to him, when you are in your deep sleep state, I don't exist, you don't exist. Is it not? There's only one thing at that time, pure consciousness. At that time, spiritual master is not there, disciple is also not there in the deep sleep state. And this feeling that spiritual master, disciple, which is existing in the wakened state also, to some extent, it's a kind of illusion also, based on the body and the relationship. That you have to accept it. You may not agree with it completely, but you have to accept these things, because what's happening in the deep sleep state? Is there a spiritual master or is there a disciple there? Where is there? Where are they? So, point is here, only at a certain time in your existence, you are feeling all these things. You see, now. How long you will feel like this, for example, in your own life, if you look back, you will see that many things what you accepted as real in this world, when you were a boy or a girl, young boy or a girl, as you get older, you start seeing that all this has no connection with me. You will get to that understanding one day. It's only come through experience that what you thought in your early days in life, very important when you were a child or when you were a young man or a young girl, that time, sometimes you can see when you interview young people, young boys or young girls, they will speak very strongly about improving the world conditions. Have you noticed that? When they go to university students, because they are in the prime of their youth and they are very determined that how important it is that the government should do this, government should do that. Now there is trouble going on in Brazil, isn't it? They are against the football matches. They are fighting there. And they are all interviewing young people. And the young people are saying, government hasn't done anything for us. They are conducting all these football matches and spending so much money. If they have spent money in the right way. Here also you notice when the young people come in too. And then so because why at that youth, you are very much fixed in your understanding, thinking that everything is permanent, and our generations, your old people, they were useless, they didn't know anything about it. They were written us off. And the youngsters are thinking that it is for us up to sort it out now, this world. But as you get 40 or 50, this generation also, when they get to about 50 years old, they'll start realizing there's nothing to sort out here. It's better I escape from here than this mess. That will come in a natural way. Without any shastram, everybody learns this. Without nobody telling. Rarely you find some old man protesting. That means he must be really daft to go and protest there at that age. Because instead of leaving this place to itself and trying to rectify this, sometimes very old people is talking about that, oh, pensioners are not getting this benefit anymore. So going to fight with the placard standing there when the Prime Minister is coming out to protest. Very old age is protesting there.
And what is, he has protested enough in life, no protest has worked so far. He's not learning anything. But by normally, I'm saying, by about 40 or 50 years old, you become more or less, you come to terms with it. You know that there is nothing you can do about it here. This world has its own way of doing things. It'll go its own way. It's pointless trying to sort the world out and trying to change the world. That's not going to happen here. So that means what's happening there is, this seriousness what you are giving to vacant state, you are not giving it anymore. The same seriousness what you have given it to the vacant state before. When you are a young person, you gave a lot of importance to the, that's when the time when you join the politics and you become a leader there, all these kind of desires comes up at that time. And afterwards, after staying in the politics for 20, 30 years, by the time you get about 50, what does most of the politicians do? They want to make some money and leave the whole politics. And it is in that process they get caught and they get into trouble. And we are seeing this every day, aren't we? Every time you see these politicians, when they, at a certain stage in life, they have worked very hard. They felt that this world needs them to sort the world problems. And they tried very hard. Instead solving the problems, they increase the problems. And they realize that I can't do anything about it. Then the next thing, attention says, now I have to live in this world the rest of the life. So I need some money. So let me make some money as quickly as possible with the position what they had. And then they want to make money and they go. And that's repeated cycle happening this. No politician stays that long also in this world to fight this world because they all fail at the end. Bhumi Devi sets this in the Bhagavatam. Bhumi Devi, how she puts it is, Bhumi Devi says that all these big, big personalities, they come here and they walk on my chest, she says. And finally, they all die and go. They all want to control me, she's saying. And she, who all she is quoting? She is quoting big, big personalities, including Prithu, Krishna's incarnations, Prithu Maharaj, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and many other big persons. She is quoting them. She says, they've all come and they've also gone. They also couldn't do it. Eventually, they also had to go. So, what's happening is, in vacant state, this seriousness what you feel when you are young is not there when you get older. You can't take anything serious anymore. Can you? That's why when you see the young people's enthusiasm to change the world and to make everything perfect here, you start ignoring it later on. Okay, yes, he has to go through his, we say he has to go through that phase of life. We start making a comment eventually. So, Ajari says here that, I'm not saying all these things to get anything. He said, Yal Prooktam, I'm saying to you this, Ajari says to the disciple, that out of compassion for you, because if your intelligence is pure, hear this very carefully, he says to him. And let there be no more doubts about this in your mind. When you are young, when some philosophy is spoken, generally what happens is, they will evaluate you very much, because they don't have the experience of life. They will evaluate you and then they will say to you that your philosophy is not correct. That it is not, because they must have already said themselves something. So, here, nothing, he says here, there is nothing to be done here. Alpan alpa vivechana abhimamano vidvalkrada rochade alma nasti yadasti gocharabhu. Kova vivektum kshami. That was the words he used there. He says, at this stage, if you come to this pure consciousness state, then this discrimination between Atma and Anatma, even that is not required. See, earlier in spiritual life, we discriminate between self and the non-self, isn't it? Satta and Asatta. But once you have reached this state of pure consciousness, Atman Atma Vivechanapi Mamado Vidvatkrita Rochate. Even that discrimination between Atma and Anatma, even that is not necessary, because Anatma Nasti. Anatma doesn't exist. Now, if you talk about body, mind, all these things, up to this time,
Who can explain our body properly? Ajari Swamiji is asking this question. And who can explain the mind properly? Can anybody in this world define what this body is? Can anyone in the world define what the mind is? Neither of these two things, body and the mind, is an unknown factor even today. What we have done through medical science and modern science is, we have learned something to fix in the body. That's all we know about this body, is it not? To be honest about that, remember I mentioned this in the last class, that when that the subtlety of this body, when your prarabdha vasana has come out, you spit it out, then this gross body has come. Science has no answer to that, you have to remember that. Science cannot explain this body, can they? Science cannot tell me why I got a body like this. In a particular place, under particular parents, and under a fat body or a thin body, or a white body or a black body, why did I get a body like this? They may say all this DNA, RNA and all these things, but Shastram is more prompt on that, saying to us that when your vasanas inside, prarabdha karma vasana inside, a certain part of that which has come in the form of prarabdham, that is something that has come out already, it has taken a gross form, that is this body. Now, there is more lying inside there which still has to take a gross form, which is in the Sanchita form, that is our subtle body, which is present there. So, here, Shastram also cannot explain this body or the mind. Body and the mind, Shastram cannot explain. Leave that behind. Can they explain Maya? See how limited we are. And we are thinking we know everything, isn't it? Ajari Swamiji's question is, you don't know about your body. Can you tell me about your body? He is asking the disciple. Can you explain your body, how this has come into existence? Can you tell me how long it is going to stay? Can you tell me what all it's going to go through in this life? Can you tell me that when you eat the food, what is happening to the food? Can you tell me that when you want to go to sleep, whether you like it or not, who is making the arrangement for you to get sleep? You have no answer to any of these questions, is it? So, practically we don't know much about this body. It is foolishness to think that we know a lot about this. Okay, we are concerned about this body when we get some pain, mostly, isn't it? When something is going wrong in the body, we go to the doctor or help from the hospital. Otherwise, who is bothered about this body? This is our connection with the body. Only when it gives trouble, you do something about it. And that too, because of the identification with the body. So, Krishna, this point here is that because it is like that, we don't know about this body. To be honest about that, that's a more truthful statement. And we also don't know anything about our mind. Do we? Really, do we know about our mind? How many times you may have experienced, I have experienced, that thoughts that comes inside this mind on which I have no control, you have no control. Things happen in life and how it affects me, I have no control. It affects my mind, isn't it? People agree with all these things. Anger comes and all other emotions comes. Why did they come? You have no answer to that. I have no answer to that. So, practically you can see the body and the mind is an unknown entity. We don't know about it enough to say that. That is why you can't explain this body properly to the acharyas. They are saying to us, you don't know about it. Simply to pose ourselves as we know everything about the body is meaningless when we don't know about it. That's one. Secondly, more difficult than the body to define is this thing called Maya. Body and mind, to some degree you will know, not to full extent, perfectly you have no idea. More difficult than the body and the mind is this difficult thing called Maya. What does Maya do? As I mentioned before, when the soul and the matter comes together, she jumps in and creates this illusion or Brahman in your mind of a thing called false ego. Body is saying, I am not doing anything. Soul is saying, I also don't do anything. And this ahankaram comes in the middle and says, I am doing everything. Is it not true? Is that not true? Think through that. How ahankaram works. I am the doer. Where did this come from? How did this come to us? I am the doer. I am the enjoyer. Body on its own cannot do anything, isn't it? It's a dead matter. Five material elements, earth, water, air, ether, fire. The other one, the self, Atma, is Satchidanandam, Satchitanandam. It has no function here in this creation. When they come together, Atma and the Shariram Deham, when they come together, this Maya sends this one in between called Ahankaram, who says, I am doing everything. I am the one who has done it. I am the one who should get the result. And I am so particular about everything. That is Maya. And about that Maya, Acharya says, you can't say anything about her. That is why Agadita Gadana Patiyasi Maya. Maya's power is so strong that no one in this world, even Krishna acknowledges that, is it not? Devi Shesha Gunamayi. Gunamayi Shesha Mama Maya Duratyaya. Krishna says, is it not? How powerful she has to be like that. That we don't know anything about her. Even Krishna is saying like this, Mama Maya Duratyaya. So from there you can understand that because it is like that, Maya is like that, body is like that, mind is like that, therefore the rishis decided not to talk about it. It's no point in talking about it, Maya. It's no point in talking about the body, not talking about the mind. Because this vyavaharam, what is we do in this world, transactions in this world, it's called vyavahara prapancham. Prapancham, creation, is for vyavaharam, isn't it? That's what we do in prapancham. Vyavahara, prapancham means creation. In creation, all we do is vyavaharam. And this vyavaharam in this creation is prarabdham. That's how they see it. From their point of view, as I mentioned before, they are saying to us that vyavahara prapancham is prarabdham. It is nothing but prarabdham. Because body is prarabdham and all the water body and mind is doing is prarabdham. That's all it's going through. It's nothing more than that. But because we have this big thing called a false ego inside, which comes and interferes in all these things and says that I am doing everything. Atma is saying I am not doing anything. Body is saying I am not doing anything. But this man who comes in the middle called Ahankaram, he says, I am doing everything. If I wasn't here, this will not work. This is how that operates. So he says here that do not give importance to the Rishi's point is like this, that this is something that has been spat out, this prarabdham, which has come in the form of this body, and the body's activities in this world, vyavahara prapancham, is prarabdham. Therefore, somehow or the other, keep that as simple as possible. And live in such a way that not to give too much attention to it and not to take it too seriously. And give all your attention to the truth behind it. Shraddha towards the satyam. This is why this chapter is important. Because if you understand this chapter properly, three modes of material nature, properly, if you understand, then you cannot give attention to it anymore. Because you can't do anything about it and you don't know anything about it. This is the problem. All you can do is to understand this principle that the three modes of material nature is working in this world. That's why rishis did not give any importance to economic development. They say, what's this economic development? You are completely acting in ignorance, in ajnanam, in avidya. You are operating. And what is the point in discussing about it? So that was their conclusions. And therefore they said like this, that somehow or the other, finish up this life here without complaining about it too much. Whatever that happens, just tolerate it and live with that. And give all your Shraddha. Shraddha. Whatever Shraddha we have, give it to the Satyam, to the truth. Let the Vyavaharam carry on its own way. Now what we have done is, all our Shraddha is in the Vyavaharam. That's the difficulty, what we have got now. All the Shraddha is in the Vyavaharam and in the Satyam, complete Ashraddha, No Shraddha at all.
No Shraddha at all. So, in when one has, this is what I was mentioning before, that those who have associated with Mahatmas, great souls, and who have imbibed this understanding in them, when their attention has gone away from the personality, Ahankaram, to Ahambodham, what has happened? All their Shraddha has fallen on the truth. And therefore, they could not offer any more attention or Shraddha to the body, to the mind, or to the world. To the body, mind, or the world. Therefore, the rest of their life, they lived in such a way, all their attention was always on the Satyam, on the truth. And Vyavaharam, somehow or the other, they managed it. How they managed it? They are not bothered about it. I mentioned this also. Many times, many of these people who lived with these great personalities, after they left their body and left this world, these people who spend the time with them, they somehow spend their life in this world, remaining time in their life. They pass their time in this world in such a way, very quietly, doing something to feel their body. I remember I mentioned about Vishwanath Swami's life. He was like that, highly learned scholar and knew enough Shastram, and he could have done many things if he wanted. But when the realization came to him after Maharshi's departure, he left the ashram and then went away. And then he was working as a cooking food for some family in Chennai and spent the rest of the life very quietly in complete realization of the truth inside. Because once you have lost the connection with your false ego, then you can't give any care for the body or the mind or to the world. It is not any more interesting. So, that will happen. But at the same time, it takes time to come to that state. Vyavaharam has to go first. Vyavaharam has to go. But this Vyavaharam won't leave till Prarabdham is gone. That's how it lingering on. Vyavaharam, sometimes you will see some people, even at the age of 85, 90 and all, they are just checking the exchange rate and the share market price and everything. And looking at there, why is it like that? That even after 85 years old, the man is not losing interest in the bank account. He's calculating the interest rates, how much the banks are offering, mortgage rates. All these things he is still checking. That is Prarabdham. That is Prarabdham. Even what should have happened at the age of 50 is not even happening at 80. And they are still watching the prices of the shares. Why is that? Why is that so much attraction to that? Because this Prarabdham is not leaving him. Prarabdham is not leaving him. But till that goes away, there is nothing you can do about it. So, if you understand that this body I have got as a Prarabdham, and all the activities that's going on in the world is also due to this Prarabdham in this body, and in that way, if you approach that, then Shraddha won't go in that direction. Shraddha won't go in that direction. And keep the Shraddha what is eternal on the truth. That is what Krishna is saying in that Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning itself. Nasado vidyadev hav, isn't it? So what you have to do in the world, you have to do it as a dharmam that has come to you, execute in that way. So this is Gita's principle. Bhagavad Gita's principle is like that. That you don't have to go all the way out to change the world. What is expected is that you take this way. Body has come due to Prarabdham, and there is some Prarabdham to be finished here in this world due to the presence of this body and the mind. Until that's over, you cannot be freed from that. With that mood, execute your life in this world. But all your Shraddha, attention, must be on the self, on the truth inside. So, but unfortunately what has happened is, many people are preaching based on Bhagavad Gita, duty, and all that. Oh, Bhagavad Gita is telling me that I should execute all my duty, isn't it? Duty and doing karma is all not Bhagavad Gita's message.
the way Krishna put that to Arjuna was, Arjuna, you won't be able to remain without doing karma. Karma, because your body has been created. Krishna is saying it in a different way. You know that. Krishna is saying to Arjuna that it is not in your hands, first of all. Your body is created with these vasanas inside, kshatriya vasana, to fight. And whether you like it or not, it will happen. You will go and fight. Finally, it will happen. And in every cell in your body, Krishna says to Arjuna, that this personality or this svabhavam of your personality is there in your body. So it will force you to fight. It will force you to fight. But that is not your permanent thing, position. That is come due to the body what you have got. The kind of body what you have got. So if you say to me, I will not take the bow, I will not take the arrow. You can say like that. After 10 days, Krishna says to him that at least in the dream you will fight. And you will kill at least 1,000 people in the dream. The vasanas are like that. It is so powerful that even if you want to escape from that, you won't be able to do that. Because to such an extent, this is strong inside. This thoughts of this vasanas inside, it is strongly there. That is your svabhava. Arjuna svabhava, that is. You won't be able to give it up, he says. So, therefore, the best thing is that you agree with this. Krishna is saying to Arjuna about this fighting, the war is concerned. That Bhagavad Gita's principle is this, that Prarabdham has given a body and that body has certain vasanas and functions to complete it. It's a cycle. But that itself is not what you are here for. You are here for to put all your attention on the self and to realize the truth. Let the body has to do what it has to do in this world. And do not make the body as the center of all your attention. Rather, all the attention fall on the soul. So take your attention away from there, Krishna says, and realizing that I am not the karta, I am not the bhokta, I am not the doer, I am not the enjoyer, and put all your attention on the nitya vastu. Nitya vastu means the soul, and that is why Krishna uses a word there, yogastha kuru karmani. Do your karma in yoga state. Remember that? Krishna says that, yogastha kuru karmani. In a yoga state, you should execute your karma. That's important. This is the yoga state. Yoga state is this, that knowing very well that due to prarabdham, all this karma is coming through me, all this vyavaharam is coming through me, and that is something has to happen because, as I said last class, that this body, once it is spit out from inside by the subtle body, it has spit it out already, isn't it? Once it is spat out, then you can't do anything about it. It has to go through that cycle. Completed cycle of experiencing what it is meant to experience through this world. There you have no control over it. Where you have control is that the, if your attention is again fixed on the self and self-realization, this subtle body will not grow further and create more vasanas inside and more prarabdha body shariram again later. You can avoid that happening. That's all you can do. This subtle science of the subtle body and the karana shariram, sushma shariram and karana shariram, is not taken into account by in our modern thinking. Everything is based on the, first of all, we don't believe in the karma. Even sometimes it's shocking that devotees, when they say to us that there is no karma for us, we are devotees, there is no karma. If it is like that, I'll tell them that, look, you take the first 6 chapters and throw it away from Bhagavad Gita. Why is Krishna talking 6 chapters about karma then? If his karma is not there, where did this false understanding come? That karma is not there. How did this happen? So that is how we are. Our understanding of Bhagavad Gita is in a very gross level. When you start seeing this, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, as far as the Siddhantam, principle of Bhagavad Gita is not duty and karma. That is not Bhagavad Gita's principle. Bhagavad Gita's principle is that you won't be able to do without doing karma. It doesn't require Bhagavad Gita to tell you whether to do karma or not, because you have come here with karma vasana inside. You have plenty of karma vasana inside. Whether Bhagavad Gita tells you or not, you are not going to listen to it. That is already settled factor, matter that is. That means you've got a gross body, and in that gross body, you have got karma vasana inside, and that you will do. Go and do it. No matter who tells you anything, you're not going to listen. It will come out. Arjuna initially said to Krishna, I'm not going to fight. Krishna says, that I'm not worried about you. You will fight, he said. Is it not? Because it's not possible for Arjuna to stay without fighting. He's looking, every time he's looking for an opportunity when to fight with somebody. So, that is kshatra vasana, isn't it? Just like a brahmana, the opposite. He cannot fight. Because vasana is not there, what to do? If you tell a brahmana, I will punch you. He says, punch me then. That will be his approach. If that will satisfy you, you get some satisfaction out of that. Acharya Swamiji was going to be killed by the Kapalikas. They wanted to kill him. They wanted to cut his head off because Kapalikas were a group of people who made offering, like in the case of Chattabharata's case. They wanted to cut his head and offer him to Kali, isn't it? So similarly, when Acharya was traveling in his time, a group of Kapalikas met him and they wanted to cut his head and take it away and offer it to their god, Bhairava or somebody like that. Some god they were worshipping, whoever it was. Acharya told them, give me a few minutes, he said, you can have my body. He didn't protest at all. He said, you can take my body. If it is of some use to somebody, let it be, he said. And he sat there in meditation. It was at that time his disciple Padmavada came there. Padmavada came to know about this, and Padmavada had chanted Nrisimha Mantra and perfected it. Therefore, when he chanted Nrisimha Mantra, Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared and killed the Kapalikas at that time. That story is there in the Shankaravijayam. You can read that story. Incident happened. What I'm saying is that Brahmana's nature is different than the Kshatriya's nature. Brahmana cannot fight. Only in rare occasions like you won't see like Drona and one or two personalities who out of necessity they had to fight. But later on Drona repents about that, saying that I had moved away from the Brahmanya Dharmam. And Shringi, you remember in the Bhagavatam? Shringi's father, Shamigha Rishi, told Shringi, what have you done? Gone and cursed that Parikshit, who is our king. And he is supposed to maintain law and order. If the king is not there, what will happen? And you have gone and cursed him. This is not appropriate for Brahmana, he says. Brahmanas don't curse anybody. So, you can see that differences. Vasanas, how they form in different people. So, Brahmana Vasana is like that. Kshatriya Vasana is a different way. And Vaishya Vasana is another style and Shudra Vasana is a different way. So, these four Vasanas in four different groups of people does exist. And there you don't need to, does anybody need to tell me Vaishya how to make money? As soon as he is born, he will look for the gold coin, where it is. He's not. That's just the natural way they are. There's nothing you can do about it. So that vasana will decide that. And there you don't need any training. Prabhupada gave this example also. He said, at one time in Calcutta, all the big Marwadi companies were there, based in Calcutta. So he said, they will never send their children to these schools, he said. Never. From the early age, 5-6 years old, they'll give them a telephone and ask them to sit near the telephone and listen to how they are doing business through the telephone. And many, many wealthy businessmen in India had never been to school. They made so much money and so much business and industry, they have built it up. How did that happen? Because of that vasana inside. Vasana is there. All they have done was they fanned the vasana and built it up without any education. And others are sending their children to Harvard and Stanford and everything to study business, business management. But these people, after making the money, they send their children there to know in the modern world what all things are happening, to find that out. Otherwise, you don't need to teach them how to do business. So, what I'm saying is that vasanas are so powerful in everyone. And similarly, you can see that some Vaishyas who are very interested in agriculture, they have such an attachment for the land and farming, that without any education, they know the very subtleties of the farm life, of the farming business. And similarly, so important thing is Brahmana Vasana, Kshatriya Vasana, Vaishya Vasana, Shudra Vasana, all these are there. And Krishna's point to Arjuna is that those things you don't have to worry about it. It will happen in its own way. And important thing is, he says here that don't put your Shraddha there. No, main thing is that Yogastha Kuru Karmani, in this understanding, execute your karma in that way. And he say, mentions to him, in that yoga state, you should fight this war. You should fight this war. And because our nature, this Swabhavam, what we have got, whether it is Brahmana Swabhavam, Kshatriya Swabhavam, Vishnu Swabhavam, this is our prison, our jail. This is the jail we are inside. Slowly we are moving to the modes of nature. That this nature what we have got, this is our prison. You see, Krishna is saying in the Bhagavadam, Swabhava Vijayam Shauryam Satyanja Samadarshanam. If you fight against this Swabhavam, and if you win, if you do win, Krishna says you are a hero. That's how Krishna puts it. Swabhava Vijayam Shauryam. You are a hero if you fight against your own Swabhavam and win. What does it mean? It means your Swabhavam is driving you in one way. Just like Arjuna's Swabhavam. What was the Swabhavam? Wants to fight, isn't it? Yes, you have to fight. But while fighting that war, Mahabharata war, Arjuna managed to realize the self. That is Swabhava Vijayam. While fighting, you are fighting your Swabhavam in this world. For example, a Vaishya is fighting his Swabhava, isn't it? What is that? Making money. Making money is his Swabhava. He has to make money, otherwise he won't get sleep. Another day, another dollar, they say, isn't it? So, same thing. Keep on making money, that's their happiness in life. And it is unlimited. No amount of money will satisfy him. Sky is the limit. So, but while doing all these things, if you realize the self, Krishna says, you are a hero. That means, how do you have to do that? You have to do it in such detachment and in full knowledge. That this is only my Swabhavam is working. I have nothing to do with this. My attention and Shraddha should be on the self-realization. Same thing with the Brahmana. Same thing with the Kshatriya also. That is what this chapter is all about. This chapter is all about, while in the three modes of material nature, fighting against the three modes of material nature, how to realize the self. That's what is the topic that is discussed here. So Krishna is saying here that once you know this, this Swabhavam is your prison, Krishna says here. How will you come out of this prison? Once you come to know about the truth, isn't it? Satyam. And when you come to know about your Satyam, the truth, then you will know, I have nothing to do with this Swabhavam, what is in me. And naturally, it will leave you then. Up to that time, it will stay with us. It will stay with us. Because we have not known the truth, that is why even after coming to spiritual life, still mind is going after making millions. We are thinking, one devotee told me, I have to make millions for Krishna, he says. I had to smile because when he said that, I have to make so much money for Krishna, he says. So he has understood it that way. What can you do? He's saying to me that I can make so much money for Krishna, he says. He's not saying that the one who is the proprietor of all this wealth, do we have to make a few millions for him? But that is the way the Swabhavam inside. So once you win over the Swabhavam, means that you get free from all these misconceptions. Attention can only be on the soul, on the realization of the self, what we are. Till we realize it, all this is no use, importance at all. So, externally, you can't give it up easily. But let the vyavaharam continue its way. But Shraddha has to be on the absolute. Shraddha has to be on the absolute. Keeping that on the absolute and conduct your vyavaharam in this world. That's the message from Bhagavad Gita. Attention has always to be on the self. And keeping the attention there, whatever vyavaharam you have to do here, because vyavaharam you can't avoid now. Because already it has taken a gross form, this body. Isn't it? Your subtle vasana has already, prarabdha vasana has come in the form of prarabdha shariram now. So therefore, now you can't do anything about it. Let it work it its own way and get through it. But not to create another extra, another body, another life, escape from that, In order to do that, Krishna's point is that let the attention always remain on the truth. Remain on the truth. So that is why knowing the truth and do the vyavaharam after that. So you may ask a question then, once you have realized the truth, what will happen? Nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change. He will be like an ordinary person. He may not be a yogi even. He may have realized the truth, but he may not be a yogi even. Because it's very difficult to find out a liberated soul. Very difficult to find out a liberated soul. And there may be nothing special about him if you look at him. If you read Jnaneshwari, you know the famous Bhagavad Gita commentary from Jnaneshwar. In there he is saying here, generally if you look at that person, Jnaneshwar was a great soul, wasn't he? He left this world at a very early age, 16 years or so, when he wrote Jnaneshwari. And that Jnaneshwari has been as the key book that has created many famous personalities after that. And even during the independence time, Bala Gangadhar Tilak and Gopal Krishna Gokhale and many others, they were inspired by Jnaneshwari. Jnaneshwari was famous for its commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And he was written that at 16 years age when he wrote that. And he left his body and he inspired Ekanath, Namdev, Tukaram and many others. A series of great personalities came from that. Jnaneshwari was the engine of all those personalities. So he says here in the Jnaneshwari that he doesn't, in Vyavaharam, in his transaction in this world, he doesn't even has to control his senses. This person who's realized the self. Because his senses will keep on doing things in a natural way, what it has to do. That is, its senses are doing it. That's the way it will be. If you remember that Nisargadatta Maharaj, after self-realization also, he was making BDs. It's an amazing thing that is, isn't it? After self-realization, we will tell you, well, why, what are you doing now? You realize the self, I mean, you should be in Vaikuntha, what are you doing here? Or you should have gone somewhere. No, the self-realization doesn't mean like that. Even after self-realization, body and the mind will keep doing things. But when people went up to him, there is a book about that, Morrison, who went up to him. And he said that Morrison interviewed him and he said, "Who am I?" That book he wrote about. I say there that he says there that while making these BDs, he was talking about the soul with him. And that full conversation, if you read, from a very higher level, he is speaking that. And you start wondering, and he is making these BDs. You would not expect. And the place where he was talking all this is in one of the very, very poor area in Mumbai, in a gully, where there was, you could never imagine that a self-realized soul was sitting there in that place. That is how it is. That's the point. So Jnaneshwari's statement, you can see that even happens even today. In different places, in different situations, people who have realized the truth, they still continue with their life in this world. So does not mean that after realizing the self, they'll do what they like and they'll wander around. So here, they in their sadhana state, that means before they realize the self itself, before they realize themselves, they would have got complete control on their senses. Complete control on their senses. But he has no shraddha there. He is not giving any attention to that. And he has no attention in his body. He has no attention in his mind. He has no attention in his senses either. But all the time, he is absorbed in the truth. Absorbed in the truth. And if you look at him from outside, he looks like an ordinary person, like anybody else. And for him, he doesn't require particularly any sadhana or any kind of yoga or any kind of anushtanam or any kind of meditation, anything. Because already he has reached that state of self-realization. Satya Darshi, Tattudarshi, Krishna calls it as, is always independent and free. And because it is like that, it is very difficult to know them. Because they are like that. You won't know that, isn't it? I mean, they don't make a propaganda in this world. I am self-realized. You cannot come to me now. You don't say that. They will carry on with their life in this world. And if this Dutchman who went and interviewed them, I think he's a Dutchman, Morrison or somebody. If he hadn't interviewed Nisargadatta, if he hadn't written that book, world would not have come to know about him. He would have disappeared like that. The people would have never come to know about him. This is the nature of these liberated personalities. There are many like that. Even today there will be. But we won't come to know about it because they don't make a propaganda also. So externally, there is no speciality. Internally, all changes have happened in the person. It is inside that has changed, not outside. Outside remains as it was before. But that anandam or that shanti or that independence inside, that is what one has to notice. Where did that come from? It came from because they get to know the real truth, nityavastu. They come to know the nityavastu. And they realize that anityavastu, which one? Shariram, body, the mind, is for vyavaharam. Body and the mind is for vyavaharam. In other words, they have realized that kshetram is different, kshetrajnan is different. Kshetram is different, kshetrajnan is different. They come to know kshetrajnan. They come to know kshetrajnan. Kshetram is busy with vyavaharam and they have left the kshetram for vyavaharam. After realizing last chapter, that was what it was about, isn't it? Kshetra kshetrajna vibhaga yoga. So they come to know kshetrajnan and they come to understand that kshetram, let it continue with its vyavaharam. Kshetrajnan, they have touched already. They have already come to that. And beyond all these things, that because he is situated in the self, Suryupa Pratishtha, it's called, he is independent. He is no more, you can't bring him down anymore back to his old state. So, this Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yogam, Krishna has spoken in the last chapter, isn't it? What we have spoken so far is a general description of that. Now, question is, what does liberation means then, isn't it? What is this Jivan Mukti means? What is self-realization means? And all these things, you may have got a general idea about it. Not for understanding, but in your realization, I am saying. Mentally understanding has no meaning, or intellectual understanding has no meaning, and that's not going to help either. Don't try to understand through the mind and intelligence, but at least in your realizations, this last chapter has given you some realization. You can't measure that, how much that is, but some understanding inside, that beyond this body, there is something in me, I'm existing. And that is where all experiences I am having. It's not in the body and the mind. When Krishna is talking about Kshetram, Kshetrajnan, that experience of that, what Krishna says there, is not happening in the body or the mind. You will be forced to come out of this mental platform and the platform of the intelligence. Mind and intelligence. And you'll start experiencing, yes, this is the truth what Krishna is saying. From inside, Antaryami starts acknowledging and accepting it. That will happen. You will say to me, no, I am still thinking and thinking. You may talk in that way, but inside, right, deep inside, Antaryami is accepting this Krishna statement about the Anubhuti inside. And that is, this Kshetram and Kshetrajnani is separate. Kshetram is for vyavaharam, and body, mind, everything will continue its vyavaharam in this world, transactions in this world. Kshetrajnan is separate and Kshetrajnan is important. Shraddha should go to Kshetrajnan. That is what Krishna said there, isn't it? So, it is not for understanding, and this will be understood better. Not understood, understood is not the word. Understanding is in the mind, isn't it? When your mind completely disappears, that is when you will experience more. Anything when touched by the mind, it pollutes that. Is it not? mind will interpret straight away. Krishna is saying something, and if it goes to the mind, mind will interpret. In one way or the other, it will start interpreting. So that interpretation has to stop here. Because the time has come in the Bhagavad Gita that you can't keep using the mind to understand Bhagavad Gita. Rather, it is direct experience of the anubhuti of the antaryami inside. Like Upanishads talks about, isn't it? So, mind, remember this, mind cannot capture this truth, what Krishna is talking about. When the mind is subdued or mind disappears, and mind also, after a long time with its effort, it tries very hard and finally mind gives up. Mind says, I cannot understand it anymore. And then from inside, the truth reveals itself to us. I am here inside. And the truth itself reveals itself to us. The truth itself will reveal it to ourselves. That is how it happens. That means Antaryami inside will give you the experience directly. Only when that experience comes, you can take it that this chapter's 13th chapter has become effective in us. When from inside Antaryami gives you that revelation from inside. Not through the studying the through the mind and the intelligence, I mentioned. Because all that verses in the 13th chapter you can see. Samam sarveshu bhudeshu samavastidam ishwaram. How will you experience, start, understand this with the mind till it comes through the experience? All those verses in that chapter. So this mind is a jada shakti. Jada means dead matter. It is. Mind is like that. And whereas self-realization comes from chit shakti. They are two different things, isn't it? You know, one is jata shakti and the other one is chit shakti. What is the difference? Difference is this. Anything that maya senses, maya's thoughts, thought waves, that comes chittavritti. This is called jata shakti. Chittavritti is called jata shakti. Chittavritti means what? Chittavritti means thinking about people in this world, different people. They come into your mind and thoughts develop around them. Objects in this world, they come to your mind and thoughts develop around them. And emotions in this world, they come to your mind and thoughts develop around them. This is all jata shakti. Because the origin of those thoughts is from jadam. Jadam, you know what it means. Dead matter. Persons and their emotions, objects in this world, these are all jadam. From the spiritual point of view, they are all jadam. Any thoughts that's originated from there and came inside your thoughts, it is jada shakti. Thoughts that's come from jada shakti. This Krishna's instructions in this 13th chapter, what we have seen, and self-realization, knowledge of the self, that realization doesn't come from jadam, it comes from the chit. That is why it's called chit shakti. One is called jada shakti, another one is called chit shakti. Both of them, in the Lalita Sahasranamam, if you look, you will see, chit shakti chetana rupam, jada shakti jadal miga. About Sri Parvati, that is how she is addressed. I mentioned this before also. Brahma Vidya we address in different ways. Saraswati, Lakshmi. When you consider the Aishwaryam opulent side of it, we call her Lakshmi. Vidya side, she is addressed as the Saraswati. And the Maya side, she is addressed as Durga. So, Vastu is same. The Vastu is same. Three different aspects she is addressed like that. So, jada shakti jadalmiga, chit shakti chetana rupam. What this means is, chit shakti will bring us closer to chetana. Chetana means spirit. And jada shakti will bring us closer to the matter. Jada shakti brings us close. If the jada shakti is very strong inside, it will bring us closer to the matter. If the chit shakti is very powerful inside, it will take us close to the spirit. ചിത് ശക്തി ചേതനാരൂപം ജഡശക്തി ജഡാത്മീയ. ഇൻ ദി ലളിതാസഹസ്രനാമം യു ക്യാൻ സീ ലളിതാസഹസ്രനാമം ഫേമസ് പ്രേയേഴ്സ് ഇൻ ദി വർഷിപ്പ് ഓഫ് ശ്രീ പാർവതി. ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് കൺസിഡർഡ് വൺ ഓഫ് ദി ടോപ്പ് ക്ലാസ് ഇൻ ഓൾ ദി ഫേമസ് ദേവി ടെമ്പിൾസ്. ഇഫ് യു ഗോ ദേർ ഇൻ ദർ വർഷിപ്പ് യു വിൽ സി വെതർ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് വൈഷ്ണോദേവി, കന്യാകുമാരി ഓർ എനിവെയർ, വെറെവർ ശ്രീ പാർവതി ഈസ് വർഷിപ്ഡ്, ദിസ് വിൽ ബി ദെയർ മെയിൻ മന്ത്ര. This Lalita Sahasranam, thousand names of Sri Parvati. So here, mind is coming from Jada Shakti. Self-realization is coming from Chit Shakti. So, our mind binds us to the Jada Shakti. That is the problem with that. So, the problem with this mind is, it wants two things, Namam and Rupam. Nama Rupam, mind loves that. Because then it knows it can keep in its control. Nama Rupam. You see this, when we discuss about Brahman, mind doesn't like it. Have you noticed that? Whenever you speak about Brahman, mind says, oh, it's boring. Because Brahman has no form. And Brahman has no proper name even. Isn't Brahman, Brahman, we say. Brahman, that's why Brahman, when we talk about any verses in relationship with Brahman, in the Bhagavad Gita, immediately people start becoming a little bit affected by that. They feel, oh, this I can't understand. And I know there are so many verses in the 4th and 5th chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. People read it. It's all about Brahman, talked about. Brahma vedena gandharvyam, Brahma karma samadhina. Lot of things about Brahman. Devotees just leave it. Because it's too much. Because why? This mind is the problem. Mind wants a name and a form. Only then mind can handle it. Otherwise mind can't handle it. If you talk to them about 747 airline, mind will be very interested. Dreamliner or anything like that. Because it has got a form and it has got specifications and it has got a name and everything fits in with the mind. Maya means to measure. That's the nature of the mind. So, therefore, when we talk about Atma, problem comes. Mind finds it very difficult. That you won't understand anything. So, whenever we talk about Atma or Brahman or Vastu, Sadvastu and all that, because the mind is finding it very difficult to capture that, that's why the mind is saying to us, I want a form. I want a form, and that is coming from that Jada Shakti. Jada Shakti is prompting that from inside. And Chit Shakti will not fall into Jada Shakti's hands. Chit Shakti is independent. So, when the Jiva, living entity, you will see this, your own spiritual life, if you look back, you will see this. When you started your spiritual life, and for a few years, you have done sadhana, and a certain discipline you have brought into your life about eating habits, sleeping habits, and your dealings with this world, you have brought it under control. Don't going and involving anything and everything. All that you have changed and you become a little bit disciplined. And in your own daily life, you have become a little spiritually aware and conscious of things. And in that way, you started also withdrawing from the vyavaharam a little bit. And desire for results, you are not too bothered. Whatever comes, it's fine with me. You will notice that it starts changing the chitta shuddhi inside. This is one's own experience. One has to look back to one's own life. Varying degrees, it will happen in people's life. To variable degrees. So, when you come to spiritual life first, you didn't know what was about all this. Spiritual life is all about, isn't it? You start thinking, some people thought it was a course for a year or two. And then go to spiritual world. Some people have come like that also. But then only after, but that doesn't matter. Whichever misunderstanding we had doesn't matter. But after a few years, you start realizing, because due to disciplining the mind and disciplining the body and reducing the vyavaharam in this world, all these things, you have become a little bit more detached from this world. In a natural way, some vairagyam has come inside. Desires for results have also gone away. Initially, people are very much want the results for what they have done, isn't it? So like in the offices and all, you can see sometimes when there is a bitter fight that goes on there between the people for the results. When they don't get the results, how they get they upset about it. But that attitude goes away. In other words, what's happening there is that grip of Maya is loosening up, loosening down. Isn't it? Initially, it was so strong, that grip, that you can't give it up. But then later on, you are taking it, let it be, so what? What's there in life to worry about all these things? You become a little bit more relaxed about it. So it is an indication of that Chitta Shuddhi inside. Chitta Shuddhi's nature is, this is how Chitta Shuddhi happens. Tomorrow we'll talk about, I didn't bring that Bhagavadam, that in the Bhagavadam, if you study this Kabilam, Kabila Maharshi's instructions to Devahuti Devi in the third canto, 26th chapter, if you study, it will give you a very, very clear understanding of this Chittam inside. The nature of that Chittam, how Chittam changes. And that Chitta Shuddhi is the one which is necessary for transcendental knowledge to get in. When whatever Krishna has spoken in all this Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, Upanishads, everything, it's not penetrating inside us. Is it not? The reason why it's not penetrating is because that Chittam is not pure. Chittam is not pure. So, Chitta Shuddhi, you will see everywhere this spoken about Chitta Shuddhi, Chitta Shuddhi, Chitta Shuddhi. Chitta Shuddhi is this. So, when Chitta Shuddhi happens, so, because why Chitta Shuddhi is important is that Chitta Shuddhi makes you more matured. And this is spiritual maturity. What is that? Nothing serious in this world. Matter, material life as vyavaharam it is. A kind of detachment from this world. If you are very, very attached to this world and the results of this world and everything, we will suffer. You know that, how it is, isn't it? So, the rat race, what creates inside, that has to loosen up inside. So, and this Chitta Shuddhi, what it does is, it prepares a person to hear Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, Upanishads, everything, Brahma Sutram, all that. Because if you want to analyze Shastram, there is a certain frame of mind necessary inside. You are not doing with the body and the mind anymore. It's completely coming from a different plane. So, Chitta Shuddhi is the preparation for hearing Shastram. Hearing Shastram. You will see this, how it is. When Acharya wrote his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and the Brahma Sutram also, in the Vedam, 80% of it is Karmagandam, isn't it? Karmagandam. Karmagandam is mainly Vedam. If you look into Vedam, it's mainly Karmagandam it is. And although it is 80% of Karmagandam, Karmagandam means that you execute, Karmagandam in the Vedam is different than the Karma Yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna put it in a little bit more effectively to us in a way that in the modern world, because here there is no Karmakandis anymore in this world. When Bhagavad Gita was spoken, prior to that, Karmagandam was a powerful force in this world. Like you can see in the Bhagavadam, Prajina Barhisa, Prithu, Yudhishthira Maharaj, they were all performing yagam, sacrifices, isn't it? And all that area, Brahmavartam it is called, it is meant for performing sacrifices. Area for that particular reason. So this yagam and yajnam, what they call in the Bhagavad Gita also, performing that was called Karmagandam. Karmagandam, Jnanagandam, Uvasanagandam. Three departments in the Vedam. So Karmagandam takes over about 80% of that. Very little about Upasanagandam and Jnanagandam in the Vedam. And Jnanagandam comes as the last part of the Vedam, which is the Upanishads. Which is the Upanishads. So Karmagandam means not only the Vaidika Karmanushtanam. Vaidika Karmanushtanam means that Vedam tells to Brahmana, this is all your karma. Prescribed karma for the Brahmana. That means Agnihotram. And so, there are so many other things what Brahmanas has to do. And there is a list given to them, 40 odd or samskarams for them. And their life is structured in a particular way. They have to study Vedam and chanting the Vedam. And throughout the day, a lifestyle for them, given to them. Similarly for Kshatriyas, another lifestyle given to them. what they should be doing in their life. And similarly for the others also, Vaishyas also. So, this Karmagandam, if you look into the Vedam, it will say that Prajina Brahi's case is also the best example, that he kept on doing Karmagandam and finally his goal was to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy. This misunderstanding came up to him. Narada Maharshi went up to him and changed that misunderstanding from him. And it is that karmam, because now there is no Karmagandam, Krishna calls it as Karma Yogam in the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna says that if your karma mandalam, everybody is doing karma. You see, nobody is living in this world without doing some karma or the other. So everybody is doing karma. Krishna says, if you do that karma without attachment and without expectation of the results from that in a selfless way. Karma is problem, no doubt about that. Karma will create new karma vasana and there will be bondage. But if it is executed in a selflessly, that selflessness is more important. Niswarthada, without swarthada, then this you can escape from the problem of that karma. For example, for us, swarthada, that is where our happiness is, isn't it? Most of the people feel that happiness is in being selfish about it. And this is a very subtle thing. Which one? This selfishness and selflessness. It's a very subtle thing it is, isn't it? If we explain that in a little bit more detail, you will understand this. Normally, in selfishness, we are happening, feeling happy, isn't it? We also say, I have to look after myself. Is it not? You have to look after yourself. Look after my interests, we say. But I don't know what my interests are, first of all. Look out my interest. Material life is like that. Everybody looking after their own interest. So, if you don't have that nature, you can't do anything in this world. In Vyavaharam, not possible. But, in a much deeper level, there is a happiness that comes. In a much deeper level, there is another happiness from selflessness, which comes from that. He can give you some few examples to make it a little bit easier to understand that. Say, in a crowded bus you are traveling and you have a seat, you are sitting there. A very, very old person who couldn't stand up and who is not probably very well came up and stood next to you. And you thought for a moment, should I give the seat to him to sit down? First you thought, well, he may be getting down in the next stop. I have to travel a long way. Who tells you that? The mind. Mind tells you that don't give the seat. You got to sit a long time. He may be getting down in the next stop. So you don't have to offer the... This is only an example, a crude example to explain this. And you didn't offer the seat to him. You didn't offer the seat to him. After a few stops have gone, the old man got down and went away. You continued the journey. You got down from the bus. After getting down the bus, you felt bad inside for what you have done. Is it not? Some people don't feel bad about that. They think, I've done right, good job. There are people like that also in this world. Very smart and clever, they think. But people with consciousness, good consciousness, they'll think they did a wrong thing by not offering that seat to him. So, what is it indicating to us? That a happiness what you would have got had you offered the seat to that person. You will feel when you get down from the bus, although physically it was inconvenient for you, but when you came out of the bus, you felt that you have done something right. Right thing you have done. So by doing the right thing, you felt certain happiness which came from inside, within. But by doing the wrong thing, when you came out, you felt bad also about it. So, if you had not offered the seat to that person, you were selfish about it. But you thought you were happy. I was sitting in the seat comfortably all my journey. But when you came out, you felt unhappy for not doing the right thing. But you took a little bit of inconvenience while traveling in the bus. But you came out and you are able to feel that happiness within. This is that subtle side of it. This is the just an example of that, that you can see here that this false ego will not allow you to do this, will not allow you to this. Every time you thought, first of all, to give the seat or not, this is one example only, but our false ego won't allow. And the friend of this false ego is the intelligence and the mind. Intelligence and the mind. They will tell you that all excuses. What will they say? Say, oh, the old man is going to get down in the next stop. And what's the point in me giving? So let somebody else give the seat. Why should I do it? All these kinds. And I still have to go a long way. The intelligence will tell you. Intelligence will tell you that at that time. I still have to go a long way. Therefore, I am not offering the seat to him. The old man stood for a long time. And afterwards, I got down from the bus. But when I came out of the bus, a pain inside for what I have done. And so, I sat there in the seat comfortably and I got some happiness from that. But when I came out of the bus, I felt some load on my head that I have done something very bad. Thing, isn't it? So, on the other hand, you have given up your selfishness, you offered the seat to that old person, but gave you some trouble to your body and to the mind, but that 1 hour or so, you just for example, 1 hour or so you have spent in the bus, that was the yajnam. Yajnam means sacrifice, isn't it? This is what Krishna is talking about, yajnam, yajnam, yajnam. He keeps saying that, isn't it? That means, for something what I am not, and by birth itself, what I was thinking I am, that is this body. And in this body, there is a demon living inside, a ghost. And what I have done is that, this selfishness, I have made a sacrifice there. Every sacrifice is a sacrifice of this selfishness inside. When you offered the seat to that person, what actually you have done is that inside this ghost of selfishness, what you, every one of us have, you have at least for a short period of time, you managed to kill him there by offering him in that sacrifice. That's a sacrifice you have made. What actually happened there? You offered the seat to the old person, but while doing that, what actually you have done is that ghost what is inside you in the form of selfishness, you have sacrificed him there temporarily for a short period of time, isn't it? So here, so by a simple action, small karma, that is, that you have done a great thing, in the sense that instead of feeding that ghost with selfishness, more selfishness, if you are not given the seat, what actually you have done is you have fed more for that ghost inside. So instead, you have sacrificed him at that particular point in time. So you can see a person who has born in a very good background, good situation, where he had good acharam or good training from the early days in life. And suppose he gets drunk. Suppose he got drunk. And then he does something wrong. So people will say, oh, that ghost has entered into his head. Because everybody knows that he is a cultured person. But then due to the effect of the alcohol, it has gone inside and he has gone and done something wrong. So, so whenever you give something, this offering, actually who is experiencing it? That ghost is experiencing it, is it not? Like alcohol you offered inside, who enjoyed? That ghost has enjoyed. Similarly, when you made the sacrifice, who felt the happiness? By the death of that ghost, you felt that, you felt a relief inside, that I didn't act in a selfish way, is it not? Though such selfishness is the ghost inside operating all the time. Krishna is saying to us, that tyagam sannyasa lakshanam, the symptom of sannyasam is that constantly able to give to others, not to take anything from others, but instead able to give it to others, that is sannyasam. That is sannyasam. Similarly, this ahangaram inside is called the ghost. That ahangaram inside is ghost. Pretham. Pretham is another word they use that. In other words, pretham means once you've got a connection with the dead body, shavam. So, because that pretham was inside, we killed that ghost inside, and that is why we were able to offer the seed to that old person who came wanted the seed. It was a difficult thing for the body, but after a while, from somewhere from the deeper level inside, you feel certain happiness. You feel a certain happiness. So what has happened at that time? Rather than sitting in the seat and experiencing that bodily happiness, on a deeper level, you experienced another happiness. Isn't it? On a deeper level. So many times if you continue doing this in life, if you keep on giving to others all the time, you will start experiencing a kind of happiness which comes from inside. That is what Krishna is going to talk about now. That and that happiness, Krishna is saying here, that when you become addicted to that, some people you can see that they get a tremendous happiness in giving to others. Exceptionally people. There are people like that in this world. No matter where they come from, it is immaterial. You will see in some people this nature. They get exceptional happiness in giving it to others. Giving it to others. Why? Because they know every time when they do that, there is inside some happiness they are experiencing. That's not coming from selfishness. That is coming from that selflessness. So that means what you are doing there is you are constantly offering that ghost in sacrifice, a ghost of selfishness in a sacrifice. Yajanam, yajanam, that is what is called in the Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita, the word yajanam, yajnam. So through yajnam, this is what is happening. And when you become addicted to that happening, that happiness inside, then you become what Krishna calls as niswarthada. Niswarthada means freedom from that selfishness. So he is also addicted to a certain kind of happiness. The other person is also addicted to another kind of happiness, who is selfish, isn't it? So in this world, you can see these two, both two kinds of people. One, who looks after themselves very well, is it not? They make sure that they make it in this world. And they will be very particular about everything. You will see that in temple also, ashrams also, everywhere. There will be some people who look after themselves very well. They don't have any problem with that. After they have looked after themselves, they will say about others, we look after others. And they will have their own logic and reasoning behind it. And they are not come to anywhere near to spiritual life. They are very far from that. You may be wondering that, oh, they are very higher positions and all that. That's immaterial. But they have not come to even this basic understanding of things. So, therefore, important thing here in this chapter is a little bit subtle in this way. That when you start keep on giving things and you become this habit develops inside, and you start getting that pleasure from inside, from being selfless. Selflessness, there's some pleasure coming from inside by giving to others. What you're actually doing is, this selfish ghost inside, you're sacrificing him every time, and it becomes a habit eventually. It becomes a habit eventually. When that habit grows very strong, you become what Krishna calls it as niswarthada. So, the happiness what he has found is coming from a much deeper level. Much deeper level. Niswartha happiness. You can call it as, if you like, the impersonal pleasure. You say, impersonal pleasure. It is not coming from the personality plane. It's not, is it? It's not coming from the personality plane. It's coming from an impersonal level, that is. It comes from a much deeper plane. That impersonal pleasure, when you start experiencing from inside, if you observe, all his karma will be without any desires and without any attachment. Two things. Whatever karma that comes through that body will be without any attachment and without any desires. And if you keep on doing that for a very long time, unconsciously what will happen is, one, intelligence start working through that body, and he will start realizing that there is another personality behind all this thing, and who is carrying out all the work through this body. These are all happening after these realizations, what we have spoken so far. And he will understand that, and he will know that this is not that personality what he was identifying with before, which is false ego. Initially, now when we are working in the normally in the conditioned state, when we are working in the world, it's my false ego telling me, do this, do that, this will be right for you, this will do good for you, like that. I work on the platform of personality, isn't it? Personality is dictating to me. But when you go into this deeper level, in a selfless way, when you start doing things, simply because you are deriving another happiness from inside, not coming from the world outside, but from inside, you receive another kind of happiness for being selfless within and constantly sacrificing that ghost of selfishness inside for others' happiness. When you do that over a long period of time, you will notice that there is another personality inside which is different from this personality which was interested in the selfishness side of it. And you will also notice that it is not in the personality that happiness is coming from, and rather than giving happiness to that false personality which I was building up inside me all the time, there is something beyond than that that gives me happiness. That realization will become stronger at that time. And there is something hiding behind that, and you will also notice that from that, when I say personality, you have to understand it this way, not go into the form and all that. An entity, you can take it like that. There's another entity from there, happiness is flowing from within. And when that becomes very stronger, eventually he'll be willing to give up himself. In other words, he is willing to offer everything, including this body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything. So it is a gradual process that happens through this is why Karma Yogam is spoken in the beginning. Krishna is saying there that through karmam this will happen. When karmam becomes the Karma Yogam. Karma Yogam is important because of this. That initially we all are operating on a selfish platform, our own personal interest all the time, keeping this in the front. We plan our life in this world. My interest first. Isn't it? What's good for me? What is in it for me? This is how we think about it. And we are operating in this world. Krishna's point is that in that way, if you go ahead with that plan, your personality will become too strong. Ahankaram will become too strong. Instead, if you follow this route, which Krishna says that you keep on giving up this selfishness and make it a sacrifice all the time, there is a pleasure that comes from selflessness from another personality inside. When I say personality, not to go with the form. Do not think in terms of a form. Personality means a kind of entity inside. From there, a pleasure starts coming to us. And when that becomes very strengthened inside, you start seeing that eventually you want to give up everything, including your so-called body, mind, everything at that time. And it is at that time when he is ready to give up himself, including himself. It is at that time that the spiritual master or Krishna's mercy comes directly to him. At that point, Guru, spiritual master or Sadguru or Krishna directly starts, his mercy starts coming to him directly. Now, from this, what you have to understand is this, that this again takes us back to the other important point. Whenever this is the spiritual principle which works through all people in this world, it's not exception. Whichever process you follow, this apply. And this is the reason why we say you don't pay to people when they come to spiritual life. So that at least a few years, they live a lifestyle of sacrifice. Simply sacrificing life for others' happiness, not taking from there. If you do that in a natural way, they will experience some pleasure coming from inside. And once they got that pleasure, then they will realize it, that it is wrong to take it. That is the way to educate them. If you don't educate them like that, simply tell them, you join us, we'll pay you salary and we'll look after you well, and so you stay with us and keep everybody on your wings. That's not spiritual life. That means they haven't understood anything about spiritual life. Spiritual life has to be like this. It's no other way. That means this is why Karma Yoga is in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Why Krishna put Bhagavad Gita first Karma Yoga? Why? Because this is the first stepping stone. You get into spiritual life through your karma. Sacrifice. That is where, through sacrifice, selflessness, completely, continuously serving, freedom, always being ready to offer it to others. That way, if you keep on doing it, after a while you will realize that there is some pleasure in this which comes from somewhere else. Isn't it? You ask some devotees who have given their life and few years in life, in spiritual life, they were experiencing some pleasure inside. That is why, without caring for their own personal interest, they were able to do that. But then what happened? They saw that they were working with people who are very much calculative and ready to exploit everybody. Then they had to give it up. Otherwise, the happiness is not in working in this world and earning a lot of wealth. Happiness is in giving to others, not by giving to yourself. Is it not? So, this impersonal pleasure, what you are experiencing from another entity which comes from within, which is not coming from the false ego, it's coming from some other source inside, and that will come when you continuously perform this Karma Yoga. This is what happens, that eventually your attachment to the results goes away. All you want to do, because by serving people you are not getting the result. Actually, that pleasure is coming from inside, from the self, from some corner inside, some pleasure is coming, that you are able to do so much to others. There is some sacrifice happiness which is coming from within. So, that is a prerequisite, pre-qualification for spiritual life. If you don't give that to people, and if you take people straight away telling them that, look, you join us and we will pay you and you be with us all the time, and that, what is the difference in working for a company outside and working for ashram then, or working for a temple? Where is the difference then? The company is telling me, I'll pay you so much, I'll work for you. Another company is telling me, I'll pay you so much, I'll work for you. Temple is also telling me, you work for me, I'll pay you. Where is the difference there? So this is the subtle principle behind it. It's not that somebody is making money or whatever. That's not our concern. Our concern is, what is spiritual life? This is how you understand spiritual life. Because this chapter is going to open up all these things into our eyes. Our eyes are going to be opened about this. So, Krishna is saying here that the... So, it was at that time when he himself become finally gives up his there. At that time, for him, there is no death, there is no birth after that. Krishna is saying, if he has come to that, that is why Krishna says, through Karma Yoga also it is possible to reach that state. So, we'll have a short break then.
चेदो दर्पणमर्जनं वामहादामोऽग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयःकैटभचन्द्रिका वितरणं विद्यावधू जीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदपूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वाप्नास्वपनं परं विजयते श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नाम्नामकारि बहुधा निजसर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिता नियमिता स्मरणेन काल एतादृशं तव कृपा भगवन् ममामि जगदीश कामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरे भवदात् भक्तिरहैर्वित्वये ऐनन्दतनुजकिङ्करं पतिदां मामृषमे भवाम्बुदौ कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितदूले सदृशं विचिन्तय मेषेण नयनं गलदश्रुधाया वदनं यद्गदरुद्धया गिर पुलकैर्निषदं कदा अवभूतवन्नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायुधं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायुधं शून्यायुधं जगत् सर्वं गोविन्दविरहे न मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां पिनष्टुमम् अदर्शनां मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तदा वा विदधातु लम्बनो प्राणनाथास्तु नेमनापरा.
So, Krishna says, what we have discussed so far, Krishna is saying this important point that how to yajnam, or yajnam means how to wipe it off from inside. That means that selfish personality is giving way to the selfless personality. That's the change that happens inside. When this change happens, it leads to chitta shuddhi. It leads to chitta shuddhi. This is the reason why I was saying this, that in all spiritual processes, it doesn't matter which one it is, whether it is through Christianity or in any kind of religious process, you will see this voluntary service, involuntarily able to offer your services, wealth or physical service or whatever that is. It's done for this reason only, that to give you an experience of a happiness that comes from inside, from another source, which normally doesn't come for people who are working in this world all the time for result oriented or are working for results, isn't it? So in our karmi life, what do? We work, we get what we get, is it not? And if we don't get it, we get upset. So why didn't I get it? Why somebody else got it? I wasn't given. This our mentality comes. So that is swarthada. That is necessary in vyavaharam. That's how vyavaharam runs. But once you come to spiritual life, that has created some problem inside us, because we bring that into spiritual life also. We expect the results to come. And Krishna wants us to understand that there is a happiness, which as I mentioned is called impersonal pleasure, whatever you want to call it, that is not coming from that personality plane. Ahangaram is not enjoying that. It's not coming from the ahangaram. It's coming from the ahambodham. That happiness, what comes from inside, when you make a sacrifice for the others, you feel some kind of happiness, that feeling that you've done something for others' benefit, not for my benefit, and you're feeling a happiness inside. That's coming from ahambodham. That's coming from the ahambodham. So we're talking about that, and when one makes that a habit over a long period of time, Krishna says that you will become so established in that, then you are willing to even give up your body for others' benefit, for others' sacrifice. So here, one important point is, when karmam becomes nishkamam, this is called nishkamam. This karmam, when it becomes without any results from that, expectation of results, it is called nishkama karmam. There is a book called Naishkarmya Siddhi, a famous book that is. And that Naishkarmyam is what is discussed in the 18th chapter when it comes to sannyasam. Krishna discusses that. When karmam becomes nishkamam, when karmam becomes nisangam, nisangam means no attachment to the results of the karma. You keep on doing it as it comes through the body, keep on executing that karma, thinking that karma, body is doing the karma, I have nothing to do with that, with that knowledge. And when it becomes completely selfless, that personality is not any more selfish personality. And in the eyes of the world, he may look very poor. He doesn't own anything here. He doesn't possess anything. But in reality, if he hasn't got knowledge, he's a very, very wealthy person. That person who has gone to that state. And provided he has got knowledge. If he has no knowledge, it won't help. For example, there is a lots of institutions which promotes service in different ways, isn't it? Hospitals, schools and things like that is carried out in that way. A lot of organized charity institutions who run all these things. But there is no knowledge in them about the science of spiritual life. They are doing it out of the goodness of their heart or whatever it may be. They're doing it, or there are some institutions which promotes or looks after their own community. They'll only care for their community only. And things like that. So what it means is that the principle is this, that somehow or the other, through selfless behavior in this world, selflessly acting in this world, want to experience that pleasure that comes from the soul rather than coming from the false ego. The one come from the false ego is from selfishness. One comes from selflessness is the one that comes from the self, from the soul. Even you can see in Christianity also they have this, isn't it? Nuns who work selflessly sometimes. Of course, there is not sufficient knowledge in the associated with that. But somehow or the other they give up, there are people who give up their life in meditation and prayers and living in secluded places, in loneliness, and they living austere life, all sacrificing all the time and deriving a pleasure from inside, drawing a pleasure from inside, not from the world outside. If there is no pleasure coming from inside, it is not possible to stay in that forever. It's not, one day or the other you will drop away from that. So actually what they are doing is they are keep on digging that wealth inside, the happiness that's coming from the selflessness. So kamya karmam, little by little fruitive activities has to go, and karmam with attachment has to go, and it become karmam without attachment, and instead of fruitive activity it becomes nishkamam without any expectation of results. If you have reached that stage, then you have crossed the hurdle of karma. That's the principle. Till then you have not crossed the hurdle of karma. That is why this is a big science in that. That is the reason why Bhagavad Gita begins with Karma Yoga. First 6 chapters is all about karma. It is for this reason. Krishna knows very well that if you have not crossed this boundary of karma, bhakti and jnanam cannot come inside. Bhakti and jnanam cannot come inside. It's not possible. Even today you can see some devotees who have understood this principle in book distribution or in some other services, what they have done, they experienced some pleasure from within, so they were able to find some happiness in spiritual life from that. There are some people still there like that. So that depends on, whereas some others who didn't get that pleasure from inside, because in the very first instance they didn't do it with that motive. Motive was different. The result was that they, for them it was a way of life, way of living, making a living in this world or maintaining the body in this world. They will never get that pleasure of the selflessness from within. So Karma Yogam, Krishna makes that as Karma Yogam, calls as Karma Yogam. You will see this, the principles of Karma Yogam, if you look at it, you will see. This is the same thing Krishna says there, isn't it? Karmanyava adhigaraste ma bhaleshu kadachana. Bhalam is not, karmam and bhalam has no connection, Krishna says. Ma karma bhalahedbur made sangostva karmani. That execute the karmam and understand bhalahedbur made sangostva karmani. Akarmanyatvam, that means you will not be able to stay without doing karma. So akarmanyatvam, Krishna says, not possible. But do the karma in such a way without sangam. That all Krishna has spoken in the second, third chapter. We have discussed that before. So here, it is at this stage, once you have crossed this field of karma, it is then that Krishna is saying here, tadvidhi pranibhadena pariprasnena sevaya. It is not that day one you go to tadvidhi pranibhadena pariprasnena sevaya. After you have crossed this hurdle of karma, then you come to the spiritual master. Not before that. But because between these two, there is a big wall between this karma mandalam and in the spiritual master. That is what he says here. You can see like this. Mind, you have engaged in the service, upasana in other words. For some people, upasana is necessary. What I'm saying is, suppose you have executed your karma yogam side well, then you may not require a lot of sadhana. You may not require a lot of sadhana because enough chitta shuddhi has happened inside through karma. Do you understand? That if enough chitta shuddhi has happened through karma, then a lot of sadhana may not be necessary. But some people will require a lot of sadhana. And there what happens is, for a person who has acquired chitta shuddhi through karma yoga, for him, the moment he hears about the soul and the knowledge of the self, it will go directly into the heart. If chitta shuddhi has happened, this hearing process will become very effective. In other words, as soon as you hear the message, it will be taken inside, taken on board. It will happen, it will work straight away inside. The knowledge of the soul, it will become so attractive to you. You will become attached to it because it is a big relief in this world when you hear about the soul, isn't it? Suppose you never hear about the soul, what is in this world to look forward to? Imagine that. Suppose there is no soul. There's nothing to enjoy. There is no happiness after death, after leaving this body. And you don't know anything what is going to happen after death. What will happen in this world? Whole world will turn out to be just but a place for each other, mutually they'll kill each other, isn't it? Then, because there's nothing left afterwards anyway. So why shouldn't I do what I like? But the very spiritual life brings some meaning to life and gives you some understanding. So Krishna is saying to us here, that karma yogam, if it has crossed chitta shuddhi, we'll talk about chitta shuddhi tomorrow. If it develops chitta shuddhi, from somewhere that shravanam will happen, of the soul will happen, and he will become, develop the knowledge of the self, and he'll become a jnani. Becoming a jnani is not the important thing, but all your effort is in going through this karma yogam side. That's the effort required. Becoming a jnani is not a very difficult thing. What Krishna is saying is that if you have purified and your chitta shuddhi is very high degree, then if you hear the message of Bhagavad Gita, it will go straight on to the place where it's meant to go. It won't require any kind of change required inside. You're ready for it. Pakvada, maturity has happened inside. So that's why in the Bhagavadam and all that, we keep on talking about chitta shuddhi, chitta shuddhi, chitta shuddhi. This chitta shuddhi is such a powerful thing. And chitta shuddhi happens one way through karma yoga. That is why if you remember in the Bhagavadam, Krishna talked about three processes. Karma, jnanam, bhakti. Isn't it? And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said two processes. Jnana yogena sankhyanam, karma yogena yoginam. But whether you are in the karma, whether you are in the jnanam process, bhakti is still necessary. Without bhakti, it won't happen. That is a mandatory requirement. But karma, some people cannot execute bhakti yoga. They cannot execute jnana yoga. They have a problem there. For their purpose, Krishna has given this karma yoga process. And Krishna knows how the subtle side works, isn't it? So, karma gandam, Krishna, when he brought it to Bhagavad Gita, he changed it as karma yoga. That's what has happened. So, there Krishna is saying, if you execute karma yoga, will purify you and become qualified for chitta shuddhi will happen and jnanam, the knowledge of the self, will develop within. So, becoming this is our effort. Which one? This becoming selfless, nishkamam, without any expectation of results, and at the same time, without attachment to the results, that is where all our effort is required, not in becoming a jnani. And if you have succeeded in that process, that is your success in the first part of the Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna calls it as Karma Yoga, and Krishna also calls it as Karma Sannyasa Yoga. You remember those chapters, if you look, you will see the titles of those chapters. I'll read the chapters, how they are titled in the Sanskrit. Third chapter is Karma Yoga. Is it not? Fourth chapter is Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. And the fifth chapter is Karma Sannyasa Yoga. They are all very subtle subjects. Karma Yoga is itself a subtle topic. More subtle than the Karma Yoga is Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. And more subtle than that is the Karma Sannyasa Yoga. you have to sit down and listen through those classes. We talked about that. And then you will know what difference is between these three things. Karma Yogam, Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yogam and Karma Sanyasa Yogam. When you understand all that, Krishna says, then you will be ready for Dhyana Yogam. So, all these things is pointing out to one thing, that the Karma Sanyasa Yogam Krishna spoke about. Now, after that, once you have gone through that Karma Yogam and Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yogam and Karma Sanyasa Yogam, you are practically a sannyasi already. Provided all that has happened to you. In other words, Samyak Nyasam has happened and therefore you have given up something. Samyak Nyasam means you have given up something. What have you given up? You have given up your personality. That's what you are given up. By now, in that Karma Yogam chapters, if you have studied it, assimilated it and properly practiced it in life, you are practically come to this stage that you are willing to give up your personality. Don't want that anymore. And the result was that he will have Shanti inside, perfection inside. And that perfection, what you will feel at that stage, when you are released due to your Karma Sanyasam or Karma Yogam, that Shanti what you will experience inside, that is what Krishna is going to discuss in this chapter in the name of Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam. That is what he is saying. What it means is taking the jiva beyond the three modes of material nature. Three modes of material nature is sattvam, rajasa, tamasa, isn't it? So, taking the jiva beyond these three modes of material nature, there he becomes complete and he becomes totally independent. Totally independent. So, that independence is the subject of this chapter. A person who has executed karma properly in this world and got himself released from the grip of karma, because karma vasana has gone inside, karma yogam has given him shanti inside, complete peace inside. Whatever karma that is happening through him is not binding him anymore, because this naishkarmyam and nisangada both has happened to him. Krishna is saying here that in essence, that yoga state, what he will be at that time, you have to remember, he has not done any sadhana till now. He's not talking about sadhana. He's talking about that state because he has utilized his karma in the proper way and got himself released from that. So therefore he says here, that yoga state, what he will achieve at that stage, will be unlimited. And Arjuna's question also, if you look in this chapter, Arjuna is asking, how will you achieve that state which you will not lose that yoga state anymore? This is Arjuna's question. So, because Arjuna says, if there is a yoga siddhi means state of yoga, if it is coming and going, it's no use. That is one problem, isn't it? In Jnana Margam also we have a problem. In Bhakti Margam also we have a problem. Sometimes devotees say, I was feeling very Krishna conscious. For some time, for a few minutes or so. Then I was feeling hell after that. That is no good. How to remain in that state? That is Arjuna's question. How will I reach a state of yoga where I will not fall back again? This was Arjuna's question to that. And what is causing the problem for me not able to remain in that state of yoga forever? This was Arjuna's question. In answer to that, Krishna is saying, the reason that you are not able to stay like that is these three modes of nature. Sattvam, Rajasa and Tamasa. Three modes of material nature is what is stopping us to remain in that state of yoga. The state of yoga consciousness. Whether it is karmam, jnanam, bhakti, it doesn't matter. Whichever way. You know, everybody complains this, isn't it? That you go to bhakti, through bhakti you reach a higher state, but then you fall again. Sometimes you fall, is it not? It is possible, great, great devotees have fallen, have they not? And similarly, jnanis fall. People who have followed karma yogam also can fall. Krishna is saying here, three modes of material nature can come and make karma yogi, Yani or a devotee, again makes them fall. Again, it can make them fall. Example, Jadavarada was in Sattugunam. Sattvagunam made him to fall. If Sattvagunam can make a person fall, can Rajas and Tamas make a false person fall? That we don't need example, isn't it? That's what I'm saying, that even Sattvagunam can make a person fall. Jadabharata was in Sattvagunam, you have to remember. That he has given up his empire, attachment, karma yoga, everything he has done very well. He was a karma yogi in that sense, that he did everything as emperor, managed the empire very well, and then finally gave up everything, handed over everything to others and went to the forest and sat in the Gandaki river. And because of Sattvagunam inside, he got attached to that deer. Because that qualification of karunyam, mercy towards that deer, it's a symptom of Sattvagunam. Why did he feel compassion for that baby deer? Because of Sattvagunam inside. Because it's the nature of Sattvagunam that you feel compassion for another living entity. So, Sattvagunam even can cause problem. That's what it is indicating to us. So, Krishna is saying here that even if you have come through any yoga margam, karma margam, jnana margam, or bhakti margam, even if you have come to a state of realization, if you are not careful about the three modes of material nature, they can even pull you down back again into Maya. It is her power. Krishna is going to talk about in this chapter. And after that, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, you have to transcend these three modes of material nature. And that is how this chapter begins. That's how this chapter begins. So, let's look at the chapter now. So, hopefully, with this introduction, what we have spoken in the last two or three classes, you may have a little idea what this chapter is going to talk about, isn't it? You have got some idea why this chapter is important and why this chapter is, right at this moment, it's not a concern. But as you move forward in spiritual life, there is these three waiting there in the form of Sattvam, Rajas and Tamas, and they can pull you back anytime. That means freedom from the three modes of material nature is important. Is important. Let's look at the chapter now. First verse.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Param Bhuya Pravakshyami Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam Yajna Tva Munaya Sarvem Param Siddhimito Gataha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Param Bhuya Pravakshyami Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam Yajna Tva Munaya Sarvem Param Siddhimito Gataha Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Param Bhuya Pravakshyami Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam Yajna Tva Munaya Sarvem Param Siddhimito Gataha. Translation. Blessed Lord said, again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained to supreme perfection. In so many chapters, Krishna keeps saying the same thing, isn't it? You feel that way. In the ninth chapter also, Krishna said, I'm giving you the most confidential knowledge by knowing which you will be released from this. And similarly, so many other chapters also Krishna says here. Prabhupada mentions in that purport, you'll see, after about 8 or 10 lines, he says, the knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters.
By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attain perfection and transfer to the spiritual world. Transfer to the spiritual world. So, as I mentioned before this chapter, that in the initial six chapters, Krishna spoke about Karma Yoga, isn't it? And that Karma Yoga chapters, one should take very seriously. If you don't take Karma Yoga seriously, thinking that it has nothing to do with me, then your spiritual life is not going very far. You are stuck in the beginning of the race itself. And it is from there the spiritual life really begins, from that Karma Yoga chapter. So, this Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga, 14th chapter, is our subject, isn't it? So, Jiva, conditioned soul, his goal is to go back to Krishna. In one way, it is. In the devotee's language, it's going back to Krishna. In the devotee language of the jnani, it's realizing the self. There's very little difference. So, what does self-realization means? Self-realization means experiencing Krishna, experiencing Atma, the happiness of the Atma. It is in the Bhagavatam, it is spoken back and forth in different ways, in different places. You will see when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answered that question about what is that verse in the Atmarama verse. He's talking about Atmaramascha Maniyo Nirgrandhapi Urukrame Kurvandi Ahaidugim Bhakti Mitham Bhudaguno Hari. The verse Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about from Bhagavatam. That verse is saying Atmarama. Atmaramatum is that pleasure of self, happiness of experiencing the self. Atmaramascha Maniyo Nirgrandha Abhi Urukrame. Then, and then Atmaramas, Mahaprabhu says there, they come to Nirgrandhi, they have broken their knot inside. That means that selfishness is completely gone from inside. Urukrame Kurvandi Bhaktim. They execute bhakti towards Urukrama, Krishna. Itam Bhudaguna Hari, attracted by the transcendental qualities of Krishna. That's what that verse is talking about. So, in different ways in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we'll talk about this same thing. Which one? The knowledge of the self, realization of the self, bhakti and Brahmanandam. Or bhakti is a rasam, what you experience from the bhakti. All these are different ways of speaking about the same thing in a different forms. So, self-realization means experiencing Krishna in one way, another way. So, and continuously, uninterruptedly. So, this is in the devotee's language, you will say like that, continuously able to do devotional service to Krishna all the time. So, if you talk about in the language of the jnani, it will say knowing the self, the swarupam in other words. Swarupam. In Bhagavatam, you will see this, tektvahi tanyadharupam swarupena vyavasthiti, about definition of bhakti. Mukti tek tanyadharupam swarupena vyavasthiti, about liberation, it's spoken like that. So, because we have jnanam, karmam, bhakti, these three yoga processes, when they discuss about liberation and spiritual happiness, the language they use also will be different. That is why these differences come. But in substance, it is one and the same thing. In essence, it is one and the same thing. What jnani's experience is the same thing what devotee is also experiencing in the same way. So, nature of Atma or Swarupam itself is Anandam, isn't it? That is the Satta Chitta Anandam is the nature of the Atma. And Priyam, love that comes from that, Shanti, this is all the nature of the soul. So, when we say something about Bhakti, Bhakti is there in the Jnanam also. And in reality, whether you see a Jnani or a Bhakta or a devotee, in reality, between a Jnani and a Bhakta, there is no difference. There cannot be any difference. Why? Because both of them are experiencing that happiness of the soul. Same Atma, from there that happiness is flowing through Bhakta, flowing through Jnani. I am not talking about Sadhana Bhakti now. I am talking about the devotees who have realized it, who are in the Parabhakti stage. In the Parabhakti stage, what he is experiencing, that devotee is experiencing is the same what the Jivan Mukta Jnani is experiencing. His happiness is the source is the same from where it is. The way they talk about it, in their language you may find some difference. Because their anubhuti is like that. So, for example, jnanis, when they talk about that atmavicharam, they will talk about in terms of the self, about the false ego inside and wiping off this false ego and other things. A devotee will talk in terms of sharanagati and surrender and more in terms of the love for Krishna. The two different ways of expressing the same truth. That's what it is. But inside what they are experiencing is one and the same thing. Both the jnani as well as the devotee. So, and the experience the satyam that is experienced is the same thing. But when they express it outside, the difference comes. Because that satyam that they have experienced, one has to find oneself. There is no other way you can experience it. You hearing from someone, you won't know about it. You have to experience it within yourself. That is why when they define bhakti, in Viveka Chudamani you will see, moksha karana samagriyam bhakti reva giriyasi. Bhakti is given such a higher position that moksha karana samagriyam bhakti reva giriyasi. So sarubanu anusandhanam bhakti ritya vidiyade. It is an unusual definition for bhakti. When you read Viveka Chudamani, you will get this question. How can you define bhakti like this? Normally, as soon as you say it to somebody, oh, he is a devotee. What is your impression about that time? Your impression is like this, that either he is chanting the holy name every day, he has got a shikha and he wears dhoti, he follows the four regulatory principles, probably he has accepted initiation, and you will generally call him, he is a devotee, is it not? Vijayaka Chudamani is saying like this, Mokshakarana Samagriyam Bhakti Reva Gariyasi. He is saying that for liberation, there is no easy process than bhakti. Bhakti is the highest process, he is saying. In the Viveka Chudamani, he says. The greatest jnani is writing this. Then he is saying, so sarubanu, but he defined bhakti straight away. So that you don't get a misunderstanding. Thinking that a shikha and dhoti define a devotee. What he said was, so sarubanu anusandhanam bhakti ritya vidiyade. If he is chasing his individual self, to realize the self, if he is doing that, so sarubanu anusandhanam, it is called, that is called a bhakti. So if so sarubanu anusandhanam means you are chasing that, pursuing that path of what, so sarubam, your own identity, spiritual identity. If you are searching after your spiritual identity, Ajari Swamiji calls that is bhakti. And he says there is no other bhakti higher than that. Mokshakarana samagriyam bhakti reva gariyasi. He says like that in the Viveka Chudamani, you can see that. So, he says, out of all the processes available for moksham, for liberation, bhakti is the easiest process, the best process, he says. The best process. But, then why jnanam karmam? That Krishna has answered in the Bhagavatam. The reason is this, that some people have a difficulty with bhakti. They find that difficult to come to that. Bhakti requires surrender, sharanagati. And that's not easy. There is a difficulty. So for some, whereas they are very much on the intellectual plane and the mental plane. In their case, to give them the mercy, Krishna has given this jnana margam for them. And then there are other people who can neither fall into this nor to that. They want to work in this world, very hard work. They want to do all the time working. For they should have some hope. Therefore, Krishna gave the karma yoga for them. This is how these three yoga systems came into existence. Jnana yoga, karma yoga and bhakti yoga. All three processes will work. And it is up to the individual to know his own makeup inside and to act properly in that. What will purify him, that's what matters. If karma purifies you, go through karma yoga. If jnana purifies you, go through jnana yoga. If bhakti purifies you, go through bhakti yoga. Krishna has discussed these three things in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And while discussing, you will know each yoga system, what it is expecting from us. Mentioned in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Nyasinam iha karmasu. In the, when Krishna, in the 19th chapter, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there, in the 19th chapter, that, we'll finish that with that. Krishna says there that the Eleventh canto, if you look there, you will see there in the 19th chapter, Krishna says, who should follow what? Sorry, 20th chapter. Where's chapter 20? Shri Bhagavan Uvacham, Uddhava asks the question. Krishna says, Yogastrayo maya proktam, nranam shrayo vidhil saya, Jnanam karmam cha bhaktischa nobhayo anyosti kutrachil. Krishna says that I have given three yoga systems. Jnanam, karmam, bhakti. Except these three, there is no other process. Na upayam anyosti kutrachil. There is no other process outside these three. Nirvinnanam jnana yogo nyasinam iha karmasu. Tesha anirvinna chittanam karma yogastu kaminam. Then he is saying each yoga system, what kind of person he should be. Say, Nirvinnanam Jnana Yoga. Somebody who is completely renounced to this world, who has no attraction here. Through knowledge it happens to people, isn't it? When they realize that there is nothing in this world to look forward to. That is Nirvinnam. Nirvinnanam Jnana Yoga. For them, Jnana Yoga will work. Nyasinam iha karmasu. They have given up their karmam. Teshu anirvinna chittanam karma yogastu kaminam. And anirvinna chittanam karma yogastu kaminam. One who has got desire a lot in this world, lot of desires, wants to have everything, for them karma yogam. Krishna saying karma yogam. And then he says there is people who does not belong to these two category, and majority of the people will be in this category. The category of jnanis will be very few who have come to this understanding that this world is nothing here. That is the jnanis understanding, isn't it? And karmi, or one who is addicted to karma a lot, you can see most of the people have, some people have that problem, isn't it? Karma. Very attracted to, addicted to karma. They have to keep doing. Some, those for them, Krishna says, karma yogam will, they need karma yogam. Through karma yogam they can reach the goal. And for the others, through jnana yogam they can get there. But the third category, who neither belongs to any of them, nirvinnanam jnana yoga yadrachaya malkadado jadashraddhastu yapuman na nirvinno nadisakto bhakti yogosya siddhidaha. That is the option, bhakti. That so, lot of people in this world, majority you can say, are in this category. What is that? They not feeling that everything is there in this world. They are not feeling completely settled here. And they don't feel much meaning for their life in this world. Life is going on somehow or the other. As long as they get a place to sleep and a food to eat and limited pleasure from this world, whatever they get, they are satisfied with that. They don't have big ambitions to build big empires and become very wealthy or any such thing. They feel the life is too short to waste a lot of time in that direction. In other words, there's a little bit of vairagyam inside. But at the same time, they are not like the jnanis. They want certain minimum comforts in this life. Prasadam on time. And a place to sleep. And a little comfort like that. That is that in-between stage. Krishna is saying here, yadrachaya, such people, if they hear what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, malkathado, and if your shraddha falls into that, jada shraddha suya puman, even if he is nanurvino nadi sakto, bhakti yogam will work for him, Krishna says. So, very nicely, Krishna puts it in the Bhagavatam, these things, what we have to discuss tomorrow. Or glory to Srila Prabhupada.